Simple orders, Hal. Find the enemy and kill him.
They attack us. No casualties. They're running hide in the mountains. So naturally, we chase them, of course. They smell like an ambush to you.
They get close enough to kill us. We'll be close enough to kill them.
Round trip by chopper, 30 minutes. That means the first 60 men on the ground will be there a half hour alone. Son of a bitch. I think maybe you ought to get yourself that M16.
Time comes I need one, sir. There'll be plenty of them lying on the ground.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. That's the wrong intro, but it's the right one for what we're doing today. Neil, are you there?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Not used to hearing that live, are you?
No, that was weird. Usually, like, that's usually the, hey, I wonder how we sounded this week song.
Right. Well, Matt couldn't show up today for Radio FUBAR. And Neil, or not Noam, sorry, too many N-words. Noam and Ben couldn't be here for Uniformed Ops this weekend. So I said, Neil, why don't you join us for Radio FUBAR? And
Frank's got too many N-words in his show.
Oh, that's an old joke.
Ever listen to Uniformed Opinions, I think...
I've said that once or twice.
Yeah.
But so we decided, you know what? Screw it. We're going to talk about guns today. We're going to talk about a lot of guns today. Tactics, crap like that, because I know Pete asked me a couple of times on Facebook about, or Pete and Matt both, you know, hey, could he have really done what happened? You know, and can we do something about gun laws and stuff like that? So, hey, I figured, you know, it kind of rolls into kind of this kind of stuff we talk about on Uniformed Ops. So, Neil, you're not busy?
No, I ain't doing shit.
What else is new? You're out on the East Coast, though.
Yeah, I'm home visiting my parents for a little bit, so I'm coming to you live from Paramus, New Jersey.
Oh, you're not just visiting your parents. You're trying to suck up into getting your old room back.
That's the last thing I want. So, I'll take a tent somewhere in the Sawtooth Mountains back in Idaho before I do that.
All right. So joining me and Neil is token civilian Pete. We'll call him today.
That's me.
That's Pete.
He made the face that I had to talk. So there I am.
So Neil, now that, because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, pretty much as it was happening. What's really changed in the, you know, well, Neil, considering, you know, how we talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Very fresh. Not a lot of, I think a lot of the facts were still coming out. We were just going off of, cause it had been only, I don't even think 48 hours when we talked about it. So
no, it hadn't even been like 4 hours.
was that Friday night or that Saturday night? If it was that Saturday night, then yeah.
It was Saturday night into Sunday morning.
Yeah, it was super fresh, and we were just going off of initial reports.
Right. And here's the funny thing. Not much in my opinion on what we talked about a couple of weeks ago really changed.
No, I think you're right about that.
Now, I did have Matt ask me if it was possible for one shooter. Oh, no. Somebody else had put out a conspiracy theory saying, how can one guy fire off that many rounds?
There was a grassy knoll by the dance stage and a shadowy figure on it. There had to have been two shooters. Oh, just know about it? No, it was people hearing the amount of casualties, the rounds and everything, and everybody immediately going, has to be two shooters. Rather than paying attention to like the amount of time he was there, how many time he had the hostages and everything, like it was a 3-4 hour event. It wasn't 30 seconds of live fire and the cop showed up and boom, it wasn't that.
Right. And,
exactly.
And Neil, you know, the big thing they were showing on TV, the AR-15, which it turned out not to be, by the way,
yeah,
is capable of firing 900 rounds a minute. No, it's not.
I heard about that.
No, it's not. Mechanically.
Just all sorts of, like, and like, here we go again, because we do this on uniformed ops every time one of these happens.
Right. Mechanically, the amount it takes it to fire one round, if it kept doing that, it could fire 900 rounds.
But it doesn't.
It would melt in about 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
But it could mechanically, yes, do that. However, it's not a fully automatic firearm. It's a semi-automatic firearm. Now, I don't know about how they trained in the Army. I know we had two rates of fire that we always talked about in the Marines. A sustained rate of fire and a rapid rate of fire.
Yes.
Sustained rate of fire is 12 to 15 rounds a minute. Basically, what that means is I have something I want to shoot at downrange that I can actually see, that I can actually target, I can acquire, and hit. I'm taking my time, you know, 2, 3, 4 seconds, 5 seconds per shot to actually hit something.
Yeah.
Then you have what's called a sustained rate of fire, 30 to 45 rounds a second. That's like what you would see in the movies, like when they're shooting around corners and over tree, you know, over logs and bushes and that kind of stuff, where they're just basically sending a whole bunch of rounds downrange really fast.
And Arnold's got the magic machine gun that doesn't run out of rounds for 5 minutes.
Right, but what I mean is, you know, you're not necessarily trying to hit anything at that point when you're doing a sustained rate of fire. You're just sending a lot of rounds downrange, trying to keep their heads down, covering fire type situation, or as in what I believe to be this case, massed troops really close or mass targets really close.
Yeah, I think that's probably exactly what we were dealing with here, just like we said on the show.
Right, because if if you think about it, even with the music and all that kind of stuff going up in the, you know.
Well, I'm pretty sure with the nature of the club, you can bet there's a lot of bumping and grinding going on.
Right. But, you know, with the music being loud, now, I'm sure it took 30 minutes or 30 seconds to a minute from the time he started shooting to the time everybody in that club knew he was shooting. The people...
At least.
Right. The people right near him knew right away. Especially if they were looking at him. But, you know, some people said, well, I thought it was part of the music or whatever, or I didn't even hear it over the music. Okay, that makes sense with a 223 round. It's basically a juiced up 22.
Yeah.
But anyway, so about a minute to everybody going, oh, crap, somebody's in here shooting people. And what did they say? There was roughly 300 people in the crowd.
I think so, yeah.
Now you've got 300 people trying to run towards... did they ever say how many exits this place had?
I haven't seen a number. I mean, I can't imagine there's more than a handful.
I mean, most clubs you would have your main door in and then maybe one or two...
One or two back or side entrances, yeah.
Right.
Like Illinois code is you have to have one exit for every 50 feet. You have to be 50, you can be no more than 50 okay. feet from an exit in a bar or a nightclub.
Right. But I don't know what size this is. I've never seen a schematic of this club, but 300 people is not really a whole lot in a room if they're up standing up.
No, your average restaurant, I think, is probably seats like, you know, the occupancy is like 300, 350 when it's full. Right.
So let's
you know, your standard right, Applebee's or whatever.
All right, but let's assume this place, say, has four exits, one on each wall. You've got 300 people running into them. That's, what, 75 people trying to get out through a hole for one person? They tend to bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
Probably have people outside of doors smoking, people trying to get in the main door and stuff like that mm-hmm. to consider, too.
Right. Anyway, they tend to bottleneck at these exits just because, you know, it's like bandwidth on the internet. You can only jam so many through the hole at any given time. So now you've got 75 people standing at a door. Not more than 50 feet away, let's say. You're not even aiming at that point. You're just kind of pointing in the general direction and shooting. And then let alone at that close a range, you've got, what, 3,000 feet per second? 2,800 to 3,200 feet per second, depending on,
yeah.
on the load. You're going to probably hit one or two or three people, depending on where you hit them and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, everybody, it is perfectly conceivable for one person to do the kind of damage that happened in far less than 4 hours. He could have conceivably done this in 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's with the necessary reloads.
Right. So let's get that theory out of the way real quick. No, there didn't have to be two, three, four, however many shooters.
Or the fact that it was 600, 900 rounds a minute. People are like, that means, because he was active for 7 minutes, he had to have at least 5,000 rounds of ammunition on him. No, it doesn't mean that at all.
If you try to fire a sustained rate of fire, what do they tell us, 2 minutes?
Yeah.
So 30 to 45 rounds a second for 2 minutes, then you got to let it cool off. So I'm doubting he was firing quite that fast. Because you get severe bullet drop if you let the barrel warm up too much.
Just of course, what kind of ranges are you shooting at inside of a crowded club like that?
Exactly. But, well, then you also got to worry, too, about cook-offs, about the weapon jamming because it gets too hot. So, from what I understand, this shooter had at least a modicum of training in firearms. We don't know. I don't know anyway. I'm not saying it's not known. I don't know the amount of training that he had. I'm sure it was a little bit, being that he was a licensed armed security guard.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Part of that was probably some sort of firearms training.
It may have been something as simple as, there's a target, hit it as many times as you can, and hope you score 70%.
Yeah. The old, what is it with a handgun, like the 9-foot qualification?
Right. So there's theory number one, or theory number two, actually, because we covered theory number one. No, an AR-15 does not shoot 900 rounds a minute.
Even I run 7 miles an hour. I'm not running 7 miles in an hour.
Exactly. I can run 7 miles an hour for a minute.
Which the irony for when they were bringing it up to Matt is there's actually a guy on YouTube that does fire till it fails. And had both an AK, not both, but he had the AK-47 video up there. He had the AR-15 build, and also they call it the SCAR, because that's the Call of Duty name. But this rifle, MCX?
Yeah, it was a SIG MCX.
Yeah. And he had it up there too, and he went through 5-6 clips before the gun just wouldn't shoot anymore, mm-hmm. which I believe was the actual gas system failing.
I'm going to do it to you now.
What?
I think you only fired one clip before it failed.
Suck a dick, Frank.
Five or six magazines.
Mine has to happen on the air, of course. He does it last week.
I did it once,
and I get to shove it back in his face.
But anyway.
You're not going to have six clips.
I think you mean magazines, Frank.
No, I was firing an M1, man. Okay, good. You got it.
Yes.
Our listeners are like, what's the difference, man?
K98, duh.
But, so do you have any thoughts or opinions or anything like that, Neil? I'm trying to get you to talk for a minute so I can finish my meatloaf.
Yeah, well, I think everything that we said, I think, like you said, most of what we had imagined that happening with this is pretty much exactly how it went down. You know, that kind of crowd with that kind of bottleneck absolutely gives him enough time to do by himself, you know, what was done. So I don't think there had, and I don't think there had to be too much in the way of specialized training or anything like that to make it happen. I think he might have had obviously some experience with firearms, but for the most part, I think anybody with, you know, a beginner's, you know, knowledge of firearms or anything could have pulled off what happened there.
Yeah, this is how it works. This is how you reload it. That's basically all he needed to do what he did.
Really all he needed. Yeah, it didn't have to be some kind of crazy marksman or anything, and pretty easy at that point to just walk in and, you know, and go and do that kind of thing.
And then Pete had asked me something, because I guess you were having a conversation with somebody about whether I would have rushed him. What?
Not you that? Particularly, but
I know. But
the question was why didn't anybody rush him?
Oh yeah.
Anybody just stand up and tackle him once he was negotiating with the police and everything?
Victim blaming at this point. You know what I mean?
And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you probably have a bunch of untrained civilians, assuming there's not an off-duty cop in the group of hostages and stuff. And you see a brownish individual with a Durka Durka accent talking about Allah, talking to the police on the phone. And if you're untrained, you're probably going to assume he might have a plan B and not the pill.
I honestly don't think the victims were probably even thinking anything like that when the rounds started going around. They were probably thinking,
well, this is in the 2 hours after when he's talking to the police, and like, I don't know if he was making demands. I don't recall the exact natures of the conversations, but he's right, negotiating with the police and everything. And so he's like, why didn't somebody just rush him? Bunch of cowards. And actually the term was cowardly faggot. I'm not purporting that term. That was what they used to describe these people. And I'm like, that guy could have everything from a stick of dynamite on his chest to a grenade in his pocket. There's a plausible reason why you don't tackle him when the police are involved.
Right. That's one plausible reason. Me, I personally just think it was a bunch of scared ass people that had no idea what was going on, no idea what to do, you know, and you cannot expect, there's a reason why these guys don't go in the middle of a police station and do this shit.
Right.
Because those police will do exactly what you're talking about. They're trained for it. They're trained to run towards the situation. They're trained how to deal with stuff like that. So even if a guy walked into a police station and took out 20 cops, there's 20 more cops that are going to know, just based on their training, without even communicating, really, this is what we need to do. This is the situation we're facing. You can't expect that from somebody in the middle. Especially these people, like I said, you're talking a nightclub situation. The vast majority of them are probably 18 to 24-year-old, no training, little training, whatever. I'm guessing no training, too very little training on firearms in general. Probably the only time they ever thought about terroristic acts is when they saw something on TV. You know, they're not the kind of person to sit around all day and say, well, this is what I should do if I'm ever in a nightclub and some guy comes in and kills 50 people. That's,
have either of you spent a lot of time around Orlando?
No.
I'm going to be honest. Basically, the same mentality of people in L.A., Orlando is wannabe L.A.
Okay.
Not like Miami, they get really pissed off when you make that comparison, but Orlando really wants to be another Los Angeles.
But what I mean is it the average individual doesn't spend their day thinking about what would I do if this situation ever came up. So you just watched 50 people get killed, 50 more people get dead or get injured. There's literally, how did I phrase it? There's literally gallons of blood and spit and ass and everywhere. The few people that may have had a thought about bum rushing this guy probably got shot.
Or who is caring for the people that were injured? Who is, you know, putting pressure on wounds and
that too,
trying to calm people down? There's 50 injured, and I believe he had like 50 to 60 hostages, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. So you got one per one taking care of each other.
Right. And then, well, and then even on top of that, 50 to 60 hostages. Okay, well, if those 60 people should have rushed. They're scared out of their skull. They are not going to be able to formulate that plan amongst themselves in that situation. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It would be different if, say, this guy walked into a First Army Division reunion.
Yeah. I was going to say a Marine Corps ball, but
something like that, you know.
Even the wives would still
Yeah, the wives would probably have a good idea of what to do, you know. At least I know I know how to hide while my husband takes care of this shit, you know. But that's the reason why these numbskulls choose the targets that they choose. I think I even said it when we were talking about it. I don't know, or I didn't know at the time, if it being a gay club really had anything to do with it. Was it the fact that it was a gay nightclub is why he targeted, or was it the fact that it was a nightclub full of people? Did the fact that they were gay matter? You know, at the time, we didn't know. The same result, regardless. They could have walked into a club that didn't cater to gay people. Probably the same thing would have happened. So, while it may have been part of his motivations, I don't think it was part of the solution. Like I said, if this guy would have walked into, say, a college bar in the middle of Orlando with 300 18 to 21-year-old college students in there, all of them perfectly straight, and did this, I think we'd have probably had the same result.
Most likely. I think, you know, I don't think anything's come out that necessarily points or corroborates that this was done because it was a gay club. I think more so just that, yeah, it was a popular, super packed place.
Well,
that he knew that he could go into. And I think...
It came out for a little while, because first they were saying, well, he's looking at gay websites, and maybe, you know, and then he saw a couple gay people kissing, and it pissed him off. And
That stuff I've heard. But I don't know how much of that has been kind of corroborated or backed up to become that, like, that was the actual motivation, and not just that he wanted to pull off some kind of, you know, mass casualty event.
It's more like three different pieces of evidence that kind of make a profile. Because between going to a mosque where the imam is very hardline Muslim on the homosexual issue, which that's kind of like saying he's just Muslim, but
he's against it except for Thursdays.
The divorcee, the history of inner...
Hold on, wait for it. Neil.
Thursdays.
Right. He's against homosexuality 6 days out of the week. Can't he, you know, they give Thursdays a pass, and you're not Muslim on Thursdays. So that's what
I just wondered, was he for it before he was against it, or?
Hey, he was against it, all right.
Does that just happen here?
Right. What?
So maybe
I wasn't sure that was an honest question.
No, that was just a reference to how gay marriage is always handled by politicians in this country when they flip-flop on it.
Right.
As they inevitably do.
Now, to me personally, this being a gay nightclub doesn't make a single bit of difference in my reaction to it. The fact that some asshole thought he could go into a nightclub with a semi-automatic rifle and kill and injure over 100 people. And came up with the idea that this was the right thing to do. I don't know. I don't know how even how you get there. You know, it's well, just yeah, not how my.
Because, yeah, not how, none of our brains are wired to come up to, you know, to be able to come up to that conclusion.
Yeah, I saw a couple of guys kissing. Therefore, I must kill 100 people. Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I just like no. Like, there's that's definitely not in the list of things that would drive me to homicide.
I can think of very few things.
So you're saying there's a list?
Oh yeah, there's a list.
Well, there's definitely a list. That's just not on it. That's like way not even like.
If we weren't targeted by the NSA before for all the shit we said.
Never no. mind, not in the ballpark. That's not even the same sport. No,
I think my list is probably like any other husband and father's list. Fuck with my wife, fuck with my daughter. I'm not talking about just messing around with them. I'm talking about hurt them, rape them, that kind of thing. I'd probably get a little bit of homicidal on your ass.
Those are the kinds of things that would spur me to violence. But having a problem with the way that somebody lives their life, if it's not affecting me, it's more like...
Exactly.
You know, right? Hey, you do you, man. Whatever.
Oh, no. They forced me to see them kiss. Oh, no. What am I ever going to do? How many TVs has this guy shot lately? I mean...
TVs, probably radios. I'm sure you have to hear about that on the radio.
Right.
You know, it's all kinds of, you know... Katy Perry or Lady Gaga, you hear one of their songs and, well, you know, they're talking about kissing girls and shit. Nope, dead radio.
Now, a lot of people want to put these kind of attacks straight to mental illness. While I agree that mental illness should be a determining factor on whether or not you can buy a firearm, I don't think it should be the default. Oh, he shot 100 people. He must have been mentally ill.
No, yeah, that's dangerous. Right. And because I think it completely neglects a far more serious problem.
Right.
But it's also easier to say, well, he was obviously mentally disturbed than it is to say, oh, well, no, this guy thinks that, you know, certain terrorist groups have some wonderful ideas and he'd like to subscribe to their newsletters.
Right.
You know, people don't want to admit that's the case either.
Was that a Simpsons reference?
That was absolutely a Simpsons reference. There,
you have some. Thank you. You have some interesting ideas. I would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
And just because you happen to be a jihadi nut job doesn't necessarily mean that you're mentally ill.
Exactly. I mean, This is why it's shades of gray and it's not necessarily black or white, is because I think you need to be mentally ill to prescribe to those ideas and to think that that's a good idea and to sympathize and be motivated by it. But I also don't think that it's the same kind of mental illness that makes you that's your culpability. And that's what you blame it on, is the mental illness.
Right.
I think it's, you know what I mean? Like, I think you get what I'm saying, is that...
No, Neil, explain it in length, please.
Okay. Well, fuck it. I got nowhere to be tonight. Let's do this. So...
I really hate that. You know what I mean? No, I don't. Please, tell me.
Now I just derailed leaving the station. You know, like I said, I think you have to, I think there's, you know, no right thinking person says, you know, that terrorist group is really the way to go to get things done. That's smart and logical. And I see the rationale behind it. So I think you have to have, I think there's definitely a part of your brain that's got to be off to go that, like, yeah, this is the way to accomplish things, especially in this country. But it's not the same as saying, well, he's not responsible for what he did because he's mentally ill.
I kind of have to disagree with you on that one. I don't think you have to be... I think they're just... Now, regardless of how you feel on religion, I personally think you probably got to be a little bit mentally ill to believe that there's a almighty daddy figure up there that wants to punish you unless you do exactly what he says, but give you free will at the same time.
I definitely think there's a bit of adult fairy tale-ness to that, yes. I would also like a unicorn.
Yeah. But I don't think that's the kind of mental ill we're always talking every, you know, on the news here. We have to keep the mentally ill from getting the guns. Yeah, if he's schizophrenic or he's a homicidal maniac or some kind of diagnosable violent tendency type mental illness, yes, everybody agrees with you. That person should not have guns.
Yes, that's exactly. I could not agree with you more on that. I don't think that, you know, and I think that there, like you said, I think there's definitely some sort of...
I think even the gun-toting nut jobs, of which I pretty much...
I ran into one that still finds that to be a violation of his constitutional right.
Now, I'm talking...
So there is at least one, not everybody. No, can't say everybody.
Now, I'm talking...
Oh, definitely,
I'm talking diagnosable violent tendencies. This person has proven that they're violent. Hasn't been convicted of anything. He's violent just because he's mentally ill. That person doesn't get a gun.
Yeah, I think we can all agree.
Now, should the court say that that person shouldn't have a gun? Yes. Should a doctor say that that person shouldn't have a gun and that should be enough? No. Think the doctor should have to go to the court, and the court says that person can't have a gun, and here's why.
Yes, completely concur with that. Because, and I'm sure, because that ties into what has been the result of this shooting, which has been some of the proposals to keep weapons out of the hands of these people, and the proposal from one side has been to completely rob American citizens of their due process rights. Not even for so much as a doctor's examination, but just be putting on a list that has no real criteria.
Right. And we're going to get to that in a minute. I want to stay with the mental illness angle here for a second.
I think you're completely right that, yes, it should be upon recommendation of a doctor. They should be able to go to a judge. You should be able to present your side of the argument, and the judge should make that determination that, no, this person is not fit. Yes, this person is fit.
Right, or not necessarily that they are fit, but we can't prove them unfit, at least. You know,
right.
You know,
you should have the opportunity for a lawyer and, you know, a doctor of your own choosing to say, to argue your side and say that this does not, these result, you know, whatever, to negate that and to essentially,
right,
you know, argue in your favor in that case before that right is taken from you just because of someone's recommendation that you're mentally ill.
Right. And I forgot where I was going here for a second. Oh, the other problem that you run into is that they always talk in the media is if they're mentally ill, we have to take their guns. Well, are you going to draw any kind of line at all on what type of mental illness? Are certain mental illness conditions different from others, or if you're diagnosed with any kind of mental illness whatsoever? Is that enough to trigger this?
Right. And there's got to be some sort of a guideline and some sort of a, like you said, a line for that. Or is it anything that could potentially, because that's something that we talk about all the time is PTS.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, certain stigma and a certain, you know, certain behaviors that are associated with it. That, you know, just based on some of those criteria alone would be enough for certain doctor, you know, for a certain doctor to say that, no, this person right. could have these violent tendencies and they, you know, it's no guns.
Or no. Even keeping it on the topic we were talking about earlier, 20 years ago in the psychiatric books, homosexuality was considered a mental illness that could be treated and done away with. You know, I mean, it's changed since then.
Exactly.
But, like I said, you know, up to about, what, 10, 20 years ago, it was actually a diagnosable mental illness.
Yeah, and I think transgenderism still now is considered
a mental illness. They actually call it gender dysphoria or something like that.
Yeah.
The doctors call it.
So is
Pete's,
that
a, Pete's you know, shaking so, his head, but he doesn't. I don't. Are you saying you don't know, or you don't?
No, that's gender dysmorphia is different.
No, dysphoria.
Dysphoria?
Yeah.
Like they're not excited about their gender?
I'm in somebody else's skin. It's a different word. He's pulling out
this sounds like Google.
Yeah, he's pulling out his brain box. I think it's DIS.
I wonder where Michael Dorn was earlier.
We watched Ted 2.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Everybody,
yeah, it's gender dysphoria. That's the correct term.
Right.
The condition of feeling one's emotional and psychological identity as male or female to be opposite to one's biological sex.
Right. And dysmorphia, I think, is actually a physical condition having to do with maybe having abnormal body parts or something. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, that was a diagnosable mental illness. So 20 years ago, should we have taken guns away from gays because they had a diagnosable mental illness? Or do we draw a line there and say, well, that's not really a bad mental illness? Who's going to draw that line?
How can you draw that line today with the way everything is?
Now, I have an idea. I think we need to create a system, because the system's already kind of in place. It may take a little bit of change in HIPAA laws, but that's easy enough to do with a Congress. Well,
oh, you want Congress to do something?
Easier to do than changing the Second Amendment.
First of all, everyone would have to get on their phones and Google Constitutional Convention.
Right. How about the idea of a firearms restraining order?
Go on. I'm listening.
Something along the lines of right now where, hey, I've got a stalker. I'm going to get a restraining order against this guy. If somebody of some relation, what I mean by that is that they have actual knowledge of a person. They can't just start pulling names out of a list and taking them all to court. But they have a legitimate reason to report this to the police and take it to court. They can get what's called a firearms restraining order. You get the restraining order, and the first thing to do is the sheriff shows up and says, hey, we got this restraining order. We are going to secure and take your firearms until such time as this restraining order is either resolved or put in force permanently.
And someone that you may suspect is mentally unfit?
Right.
For ownership? I kind of see where you're going with that.
Right, but you still have to go through the legal process. Rather than just saying, all right, doctors, report everybody who you're saying is mentally unfit, and we're just going to take them off the list. No. I mean, you're even taking doctors out of the... Let's say your ex-girlfriend says, that guy has guns, and he's threatened to kill me. Maybe I should report that to police. The police say, okay, we'll take your report. We'll take it to the district attorney. The district attorney says, that might fall under the guidelines of this. So the district attorney goes to the judge, says, judge, we need a temporary firearms restraining order while we sort this out. Judge says, okay, here's your temporary restraining order. Sheriff goes, gets his guns. It goes in the FBI database that he can't buy anymore for the time being. And then it gives the court the time to adjudicate. Simple enough?
Yeah, I get what you're going for there.
Because mental illness is already a disqualifying factor for purchase of a firearm. It has been since, 1935?
Yeah. It's either 35 or 68 when the GCA, I think GCA was 68. Right.
Well, 68 was when it was codified in, okay. in by Congress. I believe the before that, it was just kind of a given.
Yeah.
But
so, yeah, but, because, well, because right now it's
but we also,
right now it's a self-report type of thing. You know, when you fill out the form.
It is. That's all it is.
So that kind of takes it from self-reporting to, you know, a third party able to intervene.
Right. Now, where I think we need to have the change in HIPAA law is I do think we need to allow certified psychiatrists, if they are presented with a case of, say, a dude in that situation that they think shouldn't own firearms, even temporarily, that psychiatrist should be able to go to court as well and say, this guy shouldn't have guns, and here's why. And that's where you would need the change in HIPAA law.
Right.
Because right now, the psychiatrist can't do that.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to tackle the mental illness side of this, that's probably the direction you need to go in. Where, you know, I think they've tried that in some cases, but they never try it in that respect. It's always just it's always the most basic of, you know, well, if you've ever if you've so much as seen a psychiatrist or seen a therapist, it needs to go into an official record that comes up on your background check.
Right.
And would potentially be a disqualifier. And that, I think, is that puts the burden too low.
Yeah.
Whereas right now, where it's only a self-reporting mechanism, it's, you know, it's not enough.
Right.
And I think what you're proposing is a good kind of middle ground compromise on that.
Self-reporting?
So, yeah, because right now when you
right now, pretty much all it is when you fill out, what is that form, a 47, whatever. There's a form you got to fill out every time you buy a firearm from a gun shop or whatever. One of the questions is, have you within the last 5 years been diagnosed with a mental illness?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was saying that some states, the doctors can report, but it goes to the FBI. Right. If the doctor chooses.
And a doctor shouldn't be able to put you on a list at the FBI. The doctor should be able to have to go to a court. But I'm talking about
He doesn't put you on the list. He reports it to the FBI, and the FBI evaluates it, which is what you're talking about of bureaus making
Right. I'm talking about actually doing it through the judicial system. Like, that psychiatrist should be able to go to a judge and say, judge, firearms restraining order.
Look, I can just agree that it needs to be a uniform policy, because it's some states that can happen, other states it can't. So some states you're screwed if your doctor gets a Jimmy in his pants. Other states you have to answer the question like an honest American.
Right. I think this is something that you can do at the federal level. You make it a federal thing. You get your firearms restraining orders from the federal district court instead of going through the state court. How's that work?
No, we've talked about this before on the show, and I've agreed. Involve the courts.
Right.
Involve a rational judge that's a third party sitting behind the book of law and interpreting it. That's what it's there for. Right.
But what I think this allows is for those that actually have a more intimate knowledge of the individual. Like a family member can report him. An ex-girlfriend, or even a current girlfriend, a wife, a neighbor, a coworker, somebody that's said, or somebody that's actually seen this person do this thing, and, you know, that's kind of, you know. But yeah, send it to the court system. It shouldn't be that hard of a change in law. And it should be something I would think even the hardcore gun nuts shouldn't have a problem with, because at least you're going through due process.
See, I was actually going to read this because it's actually a story from January 4th of this year. And I didn't know the story existed. I was just looking up when that law was enacted just for my own curiosity. I wasn't going to, like, correct you guys. I was like, when was that? But
which one?
when the mental health provision was created and enacted. And I know U.S. code, when it's adopted and everything's different. I was just looking for my own sake. And this is from...
I thought it was the Firearms Act of 68, was it? But I thought it was even before that.
Well, this is unrelated. This is just something I stumbled on from January 4th. It's an Associated Press story, so I don't have to give full credit. The White House closed a de facto, if unintentional, loophole Monday, week of January 4th, if unintentional loophole Monday for feeding information to the national database used for background checks before gun dealers can sell firearms to prospective buyers. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services called it an important step toward improving the public safety while continuing to strongly protect individuals' privacy interests. But critics question if it would reduce gun violence or even target those posing threats to society or to themselves when armed. It's a little bit of a mixed message for policy, said Jeffrey Swanson, a professor in psychiatric and behavioral sciences at Duke University School of Medicine in Durham, North Carolina. The new rule, which was essentially a clarification of existing patient privacy law, spelled out who or what can share the names of people who, on the basis of mental illness, are ineligible to buy or own a firearm. It could have a major impact for some states in precluding ineligible people from buying guns, Swanson said. At the same time, he added, the existing criteria for who is or is not allowed to legally buy guns likely fail to protect certain populations, like people at risk of committing suicide, who can buy guns under existing regulations. That's not the end of the article, right? That's kind of covering what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's the relevant part. And yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but like I said, I think just create a restraining order. Like I said, you know, the sheriff's... You know.
I don't like that the White House fixed the loophole. I want just the law to be reformed and rewritten. Right.
Well, that's...
I agree with you on that. They did what they had to do, but still, right. I don't like it.
Yeah. But like I said, I think you need to rely on more than just mental health professionals in this situation, because like I said, the family knows better, you know, and they're not going to be able to react right away. Plus the person has to actually go in and see a shrink. You know, I mean, if a family member thinks that somebody is mentally unstable, they can report it, they can get the restraining order, and then you can have your due process. Here's my psychiatrist, here's your psychiatrist. Each of you sit down, you talk to the guy, you go to court, and the judge says, here's the answer. Either give him his guns back or sorry. But yeah, I mean, send it through the court. But I think you should be able to take the guns away right away, and that's why the restraining order.
Because right now, according to this article, the only shared thread between all the states and the laws on the United States Code in this issue is they all say if you were involuntarily committed, no guns.
Right.
And two, the doctor actually reports to the state who chooses to report it to the FBI or not.
Right.
So if the guy moves within 6 months to a year, he might get lost in the system anyway.
and that's why I like the idea of this idea that I'm talking about. And that's kind of like why I like doing it at the federal district level as well.
And at the court level too, not in the...
Well, no, that's what I mean. The federal district court instead of the state courts.
No. Yeah, I agree. Give them something to do.
Well, that too, yeah. What do you think? Because, I mean, you could do that with actual simple policy change at the court level. You almost wouldn't even need a law. Well, you would to create the facility to do it, but it wouldn't take a great expenditure or a massive, you know, all 50 states have to pass their own individual way of doing it. You create that pathway for it to be done. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think that would just... I mean, I think that goes along with everything else that, you know, comes across with these things. It's... I think that's fine.
I think
to have that handled in one universal fashion is probably the way to go.
I think that would do a hell of a lot more than anything that they've recommended in the last few years.
This is why
probably. I think that's a really good step to tackling, you know, what we we, and by we, I mean, you know, the nation seems to always come to the conclusion is a mental health problem.
Right. Because, I mean, think about how many times over the years that you've watched TV where, you know, you hear about a shooting and immediately the neighbor's like, well, I thought he was a little off, but I didn't, you know, or yeah, that guy's always been kind of weird.
I saw him in his backyard strangling squirrels, but other than that, he seemed completely normal.
Right. It's rare.
I mean, he was strangling him with his penis, but
right. Not saying they don't happen, but it's rare for just a normal everyday. He was a loving father to go out and kill eight people. Not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, because it absolutely does.
But more so, especially with these mass shooters, it was always that guy was kind of off. He was weird. Nobody liked him. You know, if we can kind of nip some of that stuff in the bud, you know.
Yeah, there's a few things that could be really tightened up on.
Oh, go ahead.
That wouldn't, and I think that's one of them that wouldn't, that would not infringe upon that right, but would also help to catch some of these earlier.
I think so,
and hopefully avoid them. I think that's definitely one of them.
Right. Now, let's tackle the fallacy of the gun show loophole.
Hey, I'm going to need another beer.
We're out. I'm actually sober for the show, believe it or not.
Start doing this shit. I should have grabbed more from the basement. Yeah, that thing that is not a thing, but people like to think is a thing.
The reason why they think it's a thing is because really the only people that do not have to go through a background check is a individual selling a private firearm to another individual. And there's a limit, I think, on 5 per year or something like that you can sell before they consider it a business. I think I double check me on that, but I believe that's correct. You know, because I think they say after you've done this 5 times, after you've sold 5 firearms, then you're a dealer and you need to get a dealer and you have to do the background checks. But, you know, like if you want to sell it to your neighbor, if you want to give it to your son, daughter, whatever, you don't have to go through a background check for that.
Right.
Buying a firearm online. I love this one. People will say, you can buy a firearm online and not have to go through a background check. Wrong. Because I've done it. Here's the exact process. Let me rephrase that. You can absolutely buy a firearm online without going through a background check. You are not going to receive that firearm until you've done a background check. So let's say you go to gunbroker.com and you buy a firearm from a shop in, well, here we're sitting in Illinois. You buy a firearm from a shop in, well, Idaho. That guy or that firearms dealer must mail that to a federal firearms licensed dealer in your state who then does the background check through your state.
Exactly.
That's how online purchases work. Let me rephrase that. That's how they are supposed to work. And if you're selling a firearm to an individual that you don't know, by law, technically you are supposed to go to an FFL to have that transferred. Believe it or not. I don't know how they enforce that very well. But
pretty sure you really can't.
But no, if you're buying a firearm online and it's being shipped straight to your house without a background check, somebody breaking the law. It's you, it's them, it's everybody. If you're buying them from a reputable dealer, which most websites that you can buy guns on are, you know, like gunbroker.com, that's a legitimate website.
We would get the calls from Gunbroker. Like when you give them the address and shipping and you tell them it was Gander Mountain.
Right.
They have to call every time, confirm our dealer and confirm the shipment and everything like that.
Right.
I hate that website. I fucking hate it.
I'm not saying I like it, but you know, there's a fallacy out there that people you can just go online and buy a gun and have it shipped to you.
It was the guys that come in like, how much is this gun? $250. Well, gunbroker.com has it for $200.
Right.
Okay. Who are you gonna send it to? This person, they'll charge me $20 fee. Okay. Ours is 45. Or you could order it from us and it's just 250.
Well, still save $5. It's $5.
I'm like, wait till they charge you for the shipping.
Right.
And you paid $300 for that, you moron.
Right. But anyway, you get my point, though. You can't buy, legally, you can't buy firearms online and have it shipped straight to your house. Those go through background checks just like any other kind of firearms purchase from a shop. Anytime I've sold a firearm, I went down to an FFL and I said, I had one here in town that I went to. Actually, I'd say, hey, John, I want to sell this guy my gun. Can you do a background check on him? Yeah, sure. if I don't know the guy, that's what I do. I mean, I sold a few, guys at the gun club that I shot with all the time. I know the guy. I'm not going to do that. Now, when we had contests over at the range and prizes were guns. All right, guys showed up. They competed. The winner in each class got a gun. Guess what? I couldn't just give them the gun. They had to give me an address to their FFL. I shipped it to their FFL. Their FFL did the paperwork. So,
all right.
So really, the only thing you can say about a gun show loophole is that if you have a guy sitting at a table that's selling one gun to one person. Because if he sells more than five in a year, he's a dealer. He has to get an FFL.
And the vast majority of people at the gun show that are selling are FFL.
Yeah, if you buy a gun at a gun show from a dealer, you still have to do a background check.
Yep, you're not getting out of that one.
There is no such thing as a gun show loophole, people. Stop talking about it. Next.
Yeah, all right. now that we solved that problem.
End of debate. That's one of those things that we got to get rid of the gun show loophole. There isn't one. Well, 40% of guns that are used in a crime are bought at gun shows. 40% of guns bought are bought at gun shows.
So you don't think there's anything to do with the personal sale?
No, the vast majority of crime guns come from what's called straw purchasing.
Sure.
That's, for those that don't know, a straw purchase is somebody else goes into a legal firearm shop and buys a gun for somebody who is not legally allowed to have that firearm. Yeah, or stolen guns.
Always cracks me up just a little bit.
What's that?
No, stolen gun.
What do you mean?
It's just, what happened to your guns? The guy stole them from me.
Right. Oh,
why'd
yeah.
you have it? So people wouldn't rob me.
Well, that's actually an excuse a lot of straw purchasers try to use.
And they still get in trouble for it. I know.
Yeah.
Name was on the gun. You're still responsible for it.
Right.
Now, you didn't report it stolen, et cetera, et cetera.
There were attempts at times, and I think a few states actually have these laws, where as a firearm owner, you were required within 72 hours of a firearm being stolen to report it. Or within 78 hours of finding out that it was stolen, basically. Now, I don't know about you, Neil, but I, at one time, had a small arsenal of firearms. Neil?
I wouldn't call it a small arsenal, but yeah. I mean, multiple gun owner.
Right. I know exactly what I own. When I own it, I know exactly what I own.
Yes.
It doesn't take me but a quick glance to go, where is, where's my AR-15?
Exactly. Yeah, you're not going to lose track of that.
So, I think any responsible gun owner is going to report a firearm stolen the minute he realizes that it's gone.
Yeah.
And if it comes down, you know, like we were talking about here, oh, your gun was used in a crime. Well, I haven't seen that gun in 3 years. It was stolen back in, did you report it? Nope. You're a straw purchaser. Sorry.
I wonder if that, you know, that so many hours might just be there. Like, you know, if your house was broken into on Friday and you don't come home from the weekend till Sunday.
Well, it always said 72 hours from when it was stolen or when you knew it was stolen.
When you
should have known it was stolen. Like you come back on Sunday, you come back a week later and you find out your shit's gone. You're not automatically broken the law because you didn't report it within so much of time of it actually happening. Well, when should you have known? When you got home. You know, so I think that's why they wrote it like that. I don't have a problem with a law like that because me, like I said, if I walked into my safe or looked into my cabinet or whatever and I saw a firearm missing that I didn't loan out or, you know, whatever, first thing I would do is, honey, did you touch my... No, I didn't touch it. Where's my AR-15? 911. Yeah, somebody, I just looked in my gun cabinet and my AR-15's missing. I guarantee you a cop's going to be there in about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Going to want to know, yeah, everything about it.
Yeah, serial number, color, make. Yeah.
Exactly. I would, you know, I wouldn't rest until it was showing up on milk cartons.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this gun?
Right.
Yeah. That's somebody like you or me. As we know from just, you know, looking around, there's not always, you know, there's not everybody has the same type of sense of responsibility when it comes to their firearms as we do. And,
right.
You know,
but
the people that we tend to associate with. So.
Right. But even then, I mean, unless you have hundreds of firearms, you can take a quick peek in your gun cabinet and go,
I think even then,
my Glock 17's gone.
Yeah, I think even then you probably have a pretty good inventory of what you normally have.
Right.
So you're still going to catch it if it's not, you know, if something's not there.
Right. My Glock 17's gone.
This is actually just a funny anecdote because we all hated this chick, but our compliance officer when we were selling guns, the one that basically yelled at us when we literally didn't dot the I's, even though it was our style of handwriting, if we missed an I, it wasn't dotted. Shoot, you need to dot that. Are you serious? Okay, here you go. You need to cross that. Okay, here's your T. One of the guys was like, can I get a copy of that form? He had purchased the gun. He was leaving with it, cleared everything. Can I get a copy of that form? And I was making the copy.
Should have been yes. Yeah.
I was making that copy, and she came up. She's like, you can't do that. Well, yes, why not? He can use that for straw purchase.
No,
what?
Can't.
if he gives that guy that paperwork, he can show it to the cop, and it, you know, I'm like, no, it doesn't. He also wants, he has this photo ID with him. He just wants a copy showing he gave this photo ID. I'm like, this is probably for his personal inventory in case it ever gets stolen or he moves or sells it or anything. He has full documentation that I bought this gun here by this person.
Yeah, I don't know what she was smoking.
I had to call the ATF to confirm he has every legal right to that paperwork.
Yes, because you have to fill out a new one of those for every single... Like if somebody come into your store and bought five guns, you got to do five forms.
Mm-mm.
We did.
There's multiple spaces.
That's right. But I mean, if
it's actually up to five.
Okay. But you know what I mean. If he goes to another store or he comes back tomorrow, he can't give you a copy of another one that he filled somewhere else and say here. No, you got to fill out a new freaking form.
Yeah, she was super paranoid. Thought he was going to try to copy the form and all this other stuff. I'm like, let's literally just call the. They have a hotline for us for this exact reason. The ATF's like, legally, you have to give him. You have to give him a copy of it. If he completed the purchase and everything, there's no reason to refuse him. In fact, it helps us.
Yeah.
And they want to talk to you.
It's the ATF, and it's for you.
Yeah, I called the ATF, but now they want to talk to you and tell you that Miss Dot the T.
Imagine, Neil, if you got called down to the head shed, and they said, here, Neil, sign this. Can I get a copy of that? No. Well, fuck you. I ain't signing anything.
I'm not signing anything. And you're not going to give me a copy of.
Well, the phone conversation was precious because she goes, well, it's not a matter of public record. And I could just sense the words coming to the other side, like, no, it's a private purchase, but this is somebody involved in the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
They just want a cop. It's the same as asking for a second copy of the receipt for records, taxes,
yep.
anything.
Yep, I had a notebook that had
an inventory list.
Everything that I owned and everything I had sold in the last 10 years. So that way, if somebody knocked on my door 8 years later and said, did you own this? I could say, yep, and I sold it to this guy at this address on this date for this much.
And this is the guy that had, like, I was just talking to him while I was making the copies and everything, and he has the deluxe industrial grade fire department file cabinet,
right?
Where it's got 50 pounds of cement, and it's floodproof, fireproof, wet sealed, dry sealed, it's everything, right. And that's where all of his gun records and tax records are.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's really smart.
No, I didn't.
That way, if anybody tries to steal your guns in the safe, they also have to steal a 500-pound filing cabinet.
Right. I was going to say, I didn't keep that list with the guns.
Not in the same thing. He had his giant, he said it was like
right
6 foot wide safe, which was bigger than the one that we were selling. And then he also had the 6 foot wide industrial file cabinet.
Right. Now, as for other gun laws, do we need any more? I really don't think so.
No, I don't think we do. I think the
I think the
Cornyn proposal is a good amendment to existing gun laws.
I don't know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Senator Cornyn was the one that proposed that if you are on, I think it's the terror watch list, and you go to buy a gun and your name pops up, much like your proposal with mental health professionals. The sale would be denied, and the federal government had 72 hours to get a warrant saying why, saying that the allegations and the reasons you're on the list are valid enough that you're a problem for law enforcement. So they could deny the purchase.
If
within 72 hours they have no evidence, your name would come off the list, and you'd be able to purchase your firearm.
I don't like that for one reason. And that's just because I don't like the idea of the government having a super secret list that A, you don't know you're on, and B, even if you do know you're on, you can't get off it.
Well, and that's why, and that's what his amendment addresses, as opposed to the Democrat side, was just if you're on that list, you don't get to have a gun. So Cornyn's amendment was, well, then the government has 72 hours to prove that you're a problem and either arrest you because you have some sort of ties to terrorism, or your name comes off the list and your purchase can go
now,
through.
Now, what I was going to say, would I have a problem with them putting a hold on the purchase if you're on the list? No. I mean, a lot of states already have that anyway. Like Illinois has a 3-day waiting period. So if you go in to buy a firearm, you're going to wait 3 days anyway. As opposed to Iowa, where once a year I would go down to the sheriff's department and I would get a purchase to or a permit to acquire. And then I could take that to Gander Mountain and say, here's my permit to acquire. They would say, okay, fill out this form. Here's your gun. Have a good day. I could walk out that minute with the firearm.
Yeah. I mean, that's how most of, you know, that's when you're in real America. That's how it is.
Right. Now, would I have a problem with a 72-hour hold, which that mechanism's already there in the process? Because, you know, I've seen it numerous times where you know, I've been down at the gun shop or whatever, and the owner calls it in and says there's a hold. You're gonna have to come back in 3 days, and we're gonna have to try again. It could have been, you know, a simple, the computers are down and we couldn't verify the record or whatever, but for some reason they would put a 72-hour hold on the purchase. They didn't outright deny it, they just said hold.
Yep.
So that mechanism's already there. So do I have a problem with that? Not necessarily, no. Now, your name's on the list, you can't buy a gun ever. No. Uh-uh. I still would like that to go through a court. So they have 72 hours to go to a court, not just 72 hours to say, here's the evidence. No, they can't have the gun.
Exactly.
If you're going to tell somebody, if you're going to tell somebody they can't have a gun, it needs to go through the court.
Yeah. And that's why the amendment, you know, his amendment specifically states go to the court and either obtain the necessary warrants to be able to press charges as, you know, either a terrorist or a supporter or whatever, or clear their name if the judge decides that, like, no, this evidence is totally flimsy. There's no good reason here for this.
Right.
And then clear the name, and then, you know, those purchases go through, and if it comes, you know, it won't come up again.
Or then you also run into the problem of how many Mohammeds are there in the world?
Oh, yeah.
How many Mohammeds have a different social security number from each other, Frank?
That doesn't stop the government.
I think the bigger problem is, you know, you're asking the government to, the federal government, no less, to function in an expeditious and efficient manner.
Well,
and I think that is a bit of a problem.
No, the FBI and the background check system has always been relatively...
The NICS is pretty quick. I mean, you could be done with that in
minutes.
Moments.
Right.
Nice, yeah.
The biggest problem with that is the information getting reported. I think if we're going to spend money on this, here's an idea, you know, because you always have the problem with, say, oh, we sold that guy a firearm even though he was a felon because it never got entered into the system.
Yeah, that's a problem.
How about we put an ATF agent or a small ATF team in every goddamn county courthouse in the fucking country? And that's their job, is to just update the fucking... The
NICS.
Yeah. That's their job. That guy was a judge. He's a felon. All right. No more guns. It goes in the same day he's judged. Oh, you got a restraining order? Temporary? Simple, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Even a 3-man team in each damn county courthouse. Now, you're talking 10,000 people, but hell.
That's a lot of people.
Huh?
Honestly, I think you could do it with one or two, not even three.
Well, even then, but I'm saying even if you're talking three, you're talking 10,000 people. Hell, the FBI adds that every year. We need 10,000 more, or the IRS. We need 10,000 more people because of this one small change in the law. Screw you, IRS. Your job is like... two people and a computer.
Can't you just teach the old ones?
Right. Yeah. But, maybe a little cross training or something going on here, maybe.
Yeah, like I said, I think if you're going to spend money, that's where you do it. You make.
God dang it. Imagine that in any other. Imagine that. Hey, we need you to. We also need you to. When you're helping with guns, we also need you to help with archery. I'm going to need like two guys working underneath me then.
Yeah. No, I say a three man team, or maybe even a 2-man team.
Three. I mean, at that point, though,
because you know, vacations. One guy's typing while the other guy's collecting the information. Yeah. Then you got to have a supervisor, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd say, yeah, a three person team.
What do you say? We move you into a position to have as many as up to three people under you. What do you
the
say
office,
to that?
The Office Space reference. I love it.
Right.
That so. Guy's got middle management written all over him.
We've been talking about the same.
See, and these kind of solutions are why I'm running for president, damn it. It's gonna be
I'm getting more and more likely to vote for you.
It's going to be me and Kanye West 2020.
Wait, he's your vice president?
No, he's the guy.
I'm out, Frank. You lost me.
No, he's the guy I'm running against.
Because there's going to be a new face on Rushmore, and it's not you.
No, he's the guy I'm running against.
There you go. That's a smart idea.
I have to defeat. Oh, well, he's a Democrat, so.
Oh yeah.
Hey, yeah. So I wouldn't see him until I wouldn't see him.
All I could think of right now is Generation Kill.
Way after the primary.
when they gave the MREs to the kids, and they're like, thank you, thank you. He's like, vote Republican.
So have we covered guns?
I think we did. I think we got it.
It would be really nice.
No, I wish Matt was here, actually.
We're not.
But we didn't have Neil, but then we could all gang up on Matt. Because I'm not a bleeding heart liberal. I'm a liberal, but I'm like, no, you can have a goddamn fucking gun. I just don't want you to be likely to go on a shooting rampage in the next 2 years. Is that a fair concession? Right. You
know? We're all pretty much on that page.
Now, I would like for district's attorney out there, if you're listening, which you're not, but if you are, stop letting possession of firearms charges be the first thing you plead away when you're trying to flip a witness.
Man, that is another great point. How often does the firearms charge go out the fucking window? It's a lot. Hint, hint, hint.
I really... One of the few laws that I actually agree with when it comes to enhancement of crimes... Use of a firearm in a crime, or what is it? Use of firearm in a commission of a crime or something. Depends on what state you're in. It's exactly what they call it. I think it's California that says you get an extra 25 years if you use a firearm in the commission of a crime. And it's just an automatic tack on. You know, you might have only got 5 years for the robbery, but if you used a crime to, or you used a gun to do it, you're getting another 25 years. Now, you have to obviously be found guilty of use of a firearm, you know.
Yeah.
Let's just call it the blood and the Crip law.
Yeah. That's pretty much
that's what it is. It's because the white people get the gun charges dropped immediately. Look, I'm just saying that law was specifically made to target them and influence them away from violence. I'm not saying they deserve it or it should go away. I'm just saying that's exactly what it is. It's like you're a gang member. You're going to jail for a long time because we caught you with a gun. Like I said, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
How about this? Gun charges cannot be used as a bargaining chip. If you're going to charge them with something and use of a gun is part of it, you got to charge them with it. Which means if you're going to drop the gun charge, you need to drop it all. Because yes, I love guns. I think everybody should be able to have a gun that can legally have one. But if you use one to do wrong, you need to go the fuck away for a long damn time.
I'm fine with that.
Not 6 months. Not, we'll only give you 2 years if you flip against this guy. No, if you have a case against that guy, you charge both of them. You come down and say, look, I can't do anything about the gun charge, but I can help you out over here.
Yeah, that's a major problem.
Use prison for the deterrent that it's meant to be. A lot of these guys will do things because they're like, you get those jailhouse lawyers saying, oh, that's only 6 months, man. You go ahead. Or that's only 2 years. Go ahead. What do you mean I'm going to get 40 years if I use a gun? 40? Yeah, and we can't plead that down either, you know, because you'll get those a lot of times. Life. Use a gun in a crime? Life.
Wow.
The devil's advocate would say that would influence somebody that is committing a crime with a gun to be more willing to use it.
Right.
Possibly. There is the idea that mandatory minimums don't work, even if the mandatory minimum is 40 years.
Right.
But I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, I don't know how true that is. But that's, you know, that's definitely a part of the problem too, that the laws that are existing aren't enforced, or they're pled down.
Or pled away.
Yeah, pled away. You know, dropped in favor of, well, all right, we can get a, you know, it's like you get pulled over for not wearing your seatbelt, but that's a $150 ticket, and they give you the driving without proof of insurance because that's only $70. You know, technically, you got away with, you know, you got the quote unquote worst thing thrown out.
I think crime. So, I think crimes that I don't know how I'm going to word this here, because I don't know. Gun crimes just need to be taken more seriously by the court system. That's, I don't know off the top of my head how you would take care of that.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, aside from, I mean, what can you do aside from what, you know, a constitutional mandate?
Because it takes the argument away as well of everybody saying we need to have more gun laws. Why?
And that's always, you know, the rebuttal to that is, well, if we really enforce the laws that were on the books.
Yeah, if you're not going to bother with the ones we already have, what good is another one going to do?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, if we were enforcing 100% of the gun laws that were on the books right now and we still had this problem, then I'd fully agree. Yeah, we need to do a lot more about guns. But we're not at this point.
Yeah, you're right.
Not saying we shouldn't do more. But use your brain for a minute. The nice thing about the background check law, as opposed to any other law that's been thought of at this point, is it is one of those laws that could possibly stop from something from happening before it happens. It's a proactive law instead of a reactive law. You know, it's against the law to kill somebody. Okay, but you mean he actually has to kill somebody before we can charge him with it? It's against the law to do this. It's against the law to do that. But okay, if we got this background check law with the restraining orders, okay, we can actually maybe get this guy's guns away from him before he actually goes out and kills somebody.
Well, there is attempted murder too.
Right, but you still have to actually try to kill them.
Right.
The background check law, or the background check, or not the background check, but the mental health restraining orders that I'm talking about might have a chance of maybe the attempted murder or the murder not happening in the first place if you can take the tools away from the people that are apt to want to do those things. No, we're not bringing the funny today, Neil.
Well, you know, it's just like we always say on the other show, it's some of these are difficult subjects to be funny about.
This is not the usual format, and I am the token civilian, so I'm being as civil as I can be.
Well, no, we want your opinion, too.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, and you know, it's a totally different show.
Right.
Both concepts that you're talking about, though, involve thought crime, which is Orwellian in its nature. You can't make the thought of doing something illegal, which is as far as you could possibly go on any law.
Right.
Is thinking of breaking the law is illegal. That's stupid. How do you prove it?
Right.
Now you're talking about actually brainwashing or controlling brainwaves and stuff, and let's all grab our aluminum foil hats. And
yeah, it's Minority Report.
But when you were reducing it down to, but you still have to go out and try, I'm like, well, then technically, all of the phases of killing somebody are legal besides thinking about it, just like
Right. Thinking
about robbing a bank with a gun is not illegal.
Right. Otherwise, every movie...
Purchasing the gun to rob the bank, if you pass the background check, is not illegal.
Right.
Carrying a gun to the entrance of a bank is not illegal. Robbing the bank with the gun is illegal.
Right. But...
I don't think,
like I said, the mental illness aspect of it, at least. I mean, you're not going to be able to stop all of them. There's no way. No way. Like I said, you're looking at the preponderance here of trying to get rid of the ones that you can. Like I said, if I chose to rob a bank today, I could probably do it. because I could get all of the tools. I'm not going to show up on any kind of...
Oh, you're in Illinois, so 3 days.
Right. But, you know, I mean, I could get all of it now. If you were sitting here saying, you know what, he's just crazy enough to go kill somebody and rob a bank, you should be able to take that information to a court. Now, they'd have to prove that I had that capacity, and that's where the mental health professionals, you know, he gets one, I get one, and we, you know, and you fight it. But at least then you're at least being adjudicated to that. So it may be a thought. Well, his
right. No, you still have to express it somehow.
Right.
That's the key difference. That's what makes it reasonable in my mind. You're still expressing somehow in an outwardly way that you are potentially dangerous to your fellow man in some respect.
Right. Either by speech, actions, just your normal way of doing things, you know. Like I said, you could be one of the, you may
can't
have never,
go to the police with, he had a crazy look in his eye, maybe we should investigate him. But you can go and say, yeah, he's saying some weird shit about banks and corporations and getting back what's his and buying guns. And I'm just putting it out there, you know?
Right. And let him take it to the court and figure it out. But at least...
Then it's the prosecution's problem.
Right. They said, you know, we're not necessarily going to arrest you and put you in jail for saying those things, but we aren't going to allow you access to the tools to do those things.
At least with very much
ease. Yeah. I don't, you know. But is that, you know, okay, does that, you know, what kind of scrutiny does that pass as far as rhetoric being enough to deny somebody what is a constitutional right?
Again, that's why the mental health.
Well, to flip it back to you, Neil, how often would you openly speak about actually sexually assaulting somebody? And I know it's two different natures of crimes.
Like at least like 3 times a day.
You tell your wife, like, I'm going to rape the crap out of that lady later. Like,
now, I don't think the vast majority of people that actually do, say, rob a bank or go to kill somebody are vocalizing their intent, you know, that directly. You know, I really wish I could rob a bank.
What I was going for there, though, is there's reasonable levels there. If somebody feels they're being pursued and potentially might be a victim, they can go to the court and say, I just want a legal restriction on this person to not be near me because et cetera, here's my reasoning. And that has to pass a reasonable scrutiny too. Like, do you actually have to work with this person every day? Well, then it's up to the business, et cetera, et cetera. That's sexual harassment.
Right.
There is a reasonable amount of scrutiny on other crimes where you can keep somebody away from you or keep somebody away from areas.
Right. And why not extend that to firearms? At least you get the adjudication process into the mental health aspect. I think that guy's nuts.
So I get where you were going with that, Neil, but I think there's precedent on other crimes to be able to apply.
But I think the only problem with that is that other crime, you know, you don't have a constitutional right to rape somebody. You don't have a constitutional right to murder somebody. So it becomes more of a, you know, it's denying a civil right as opposed to, you know, having that scrutiny to reasonably believe that someone would commit a crime. Kind of know what I'm saying? Like,
I hear you. But there's
also, so I think that's where the scrutiny level gets kind of raised up, which I don't think is insurmountable. I think it's just that's kind of going to be a little more difficult than saying, well, we have reasonable suspicion to believe that you're going to beat your wife. You have to come with us and you can't stay the night in this home.
There's also a constitutional right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Sure.
If somebody's taking actions or make... Yes.
No. That is not in the Constitution.
Damn it. I'm going to get away with
that. That's in the Declaration of Independence.
Not for you meddling, Franklin. Hey, founding fathers wrote both, dickweeds.
Doesn't matter.
Same signatures on either one, so...
The Declaration of Independence is not a foundational document to the formation.
Are we
going to
go into this debate
government?
Of the amendment? Because I've prepared for this. I'm
the
down.
Declaration of Independence was basically a giant "fuck you, King."
Right, and so was the Second Amendment.
Right,
it was sirs. No,
and so was the first.
Let's be completely honest. The draft negates the entire proposal of the Second Amendment. You guys focus on the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, and I, you know what, the language is there. I'm totally with you. But if we're going to debate the constitutionality of the right and its practicality, the first half of that is the well-regulated militia being necessary to the freedom of the state. Which right. was, you know what, if the British ever came back, maybe we should make sure our militia are trained beforehand, before we have to activate them. Because last time we had to do this, we had to get John Hancock to pay for the guns, and he was running out of money. We had to beg, borrow, and steal from Virginia. Maybe we should just pay for some guns of these guys and make it a constitutional right that they should, and give them the training to maintain the guns. Because that way, if the British come back like they did in 1812, we're ready for them.
Well,
but then also in 1812, they said, hey, how about we just, you know, make a constitution, a law that says we can just, boom, compel you into military service, which at the time was viewed and debated and said,
right.
this violates the very spirit of our Constitution, that a state can compel you to fight. The same founding fathers that wrote the Second Amendment are like, wait, this is dirty. This is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this.
Right, but if you're also
now we're arguing federalism.
Right, but if you're also going to use two parts of one amendment to you know, say one part affects the other part, should the freedom of the press in any way reflect or any way restrict freedom of religion?
Can it?
Should it? Should restrictions on your freedom of speech also restrict your freedom of religion?
You're asking an atheist that. So
yeah,
or your freedom from religion. Same thing.
Well, there's no
freedom from religion.
Well, there is technically
separation of the church and state. Yeah.
Well, the state can. Yeah.
Heard that a thousand times from Ted Cruz, but
no, freedom from religion is you can't force somebody to practice a religion. You can say you're free to practice any religion you want, but you can't say you must practice a religion. That's freedom from religion. That actually is. Can be
so with this,
directly derived from the freedom.
With the wording of the Second Amendment, why do we keep ex-convicts from owning firearms? That is definitely
the Supreme Court that
is definitely infringing on their constitutional right to keep and bear arms.
You'd have to ask the Supreme Court that. They said it was okay.
Well, you're literally passing the buck right now. The nature was like the constitutionality of the right, but we've already removed that for groups of people.
But that's what the Supreme Court is there to determine issues.
What I'm saying is passing it and saying, well, the Supreme Court decided it is basically saying we don't have the right to discuss it either. That's not fair.
I don't think anybody.
But the Supreme Court hasn't made a determination on this one yet.
Right.
We could be debated and brought before the Supreme Court, and then they say that, like, oh, no, that's fine.
What I was getting at with that is the concepts bleed into each other. Right. There is a reasonable amount where your rights are taken away if you are proven to be a reasonable danger to your fellow man, the same way that if somebody reasonably respects danger from another person, they can get a restraining order or a protection order from them.
Right. I don't think any founding father would think that a murderer should have access to a musket. I think I can speak for George Washington on that, saying this guy likes to kill people with muskets.
How
can
British was the guy he killed?
You're right. Well, I'm not entirely sure.
I might speak for somebody far lesser known than George Washington.
No, I'm not talking about killing somebody in war. I'm talking about just flat out killing you. That guy wants to kill his neighbor. Why?
Absolute murder.
He just wants to kill his neighbor. Why? Because he's his neighbor. He's there. He's flesh that a bullet can go through.
That sounds a lot like mental illness.
Right.
Would preclude that gentleman from owning a gun in the first place. So
exactly.
That's the squirrel guy I was talking about.
So if we enact the original laws that we had discussed, we probably eliminate a lot of the other ones.
Right. Now, I also, maybe I read the Constitution a little bit too literally, but it doesn't say the right of the person to bear arms. It says the right of the people, meaning people, you know, everybody, this group of people.
So almost like saying that American citizens are a protected class.
Right.
That as a whole, you could not deny American citizens the right.
Right.
But yeah. Depending on mitigating circumstances, you could deny it to an individual.
Individual person, yes.
Which is something they've brought up from Britain and everything. Why don't you just ban guns nationally? You technically can't with the Second Amendment there.
Right.
You'd have to get rid of the Second Amendment, then ban guns.
So the Constitution is not saying the federal government can't take your individual right. It's saying that it can't take everybody's. Just in mass, saying, look, no more guns. Nope, sorry, I can't do that. Maybe that's too literal of a reading for our liberal guests that are listening.
Do we have listeners this time?
But that's actually a really good point, and that's, you know, and I had never looked at that. I'd never looked at the Second Amendment that way before, where it makes, you know, it makes the American people, American citizens, a protected class, and that would be why you could not deny that right to the entire citizenry. But you are able to, like I said, depending on circumstances, deny it to an individual, such as a felon,
right.
Etc.
Somebody
with mental illness. Pete. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty interesting, and I think based on that interpretation. Break although I smoke. Wonder if that's maybe not, you know, maybe that's more. That might be something in line with like the Heller decisions in the Supreme Court, or McDonald, where you know you can't just sit there and say, well, the entire citizenry of Chicago cannot own a firearm,
right?
Or the entire citizenry of Washington, D.C. cannot own one.
Right.
But it makes the states that may issue concealed carry states legal because you can, well, I can deny this individual their application based on the criteria I've set forth.
Right. Yeah, you're not denying it to the whole class of the state. I've never had a huge issue with carry permits. Because you're not
like the idea of them or getting one.
The idea of them.
Oh, all right. The phrasing was weird on that. Right.
Well, a lot of people will say, "I have a constitutional."
I've never had a problem with wine. Like
no, no. What I mean is, you know, I have a constitutional right to carry. I don't need a goddamn permit to carry. The Constitution says I can carry. No, it doesn't. It says you can bear arms. It means you can. You can hold one, basically, is what it means.
Even the verbiage of the word bear has been
right. You can own
debated.
It.
Is right. It when somebody's threatening you? Is it when somebody's invading? Is it somebody coming into your property? Right. When is bearing the arms?
Right. Now, I do have a problem with certain states that say you have to have a reason to carry a firearm. I agree with the permit. I agree that a little bit of training isn't a bad thing if you're going to get a current permit and walk around with one, because you should be able to do so safely. There are some states, though, California and New Jersey and New York are really the big ones, that say you have to have a legitimate reason to carry a firearm, such as somebody has made an active threat against you, we might give you a permit to carry.
Yeah, and that's still a pretty big, it's still a pretty big might.
Right. Well, you live in New Jersey, you know what I'm talking about. They're
Oh, I know, absolutely. Being a gun owner in New Jersey is that's a horrible, horrible right. thing.
Especially
if you want to be a handgun owner.
I can also see why you might want to restrict an individual's ability to carry, but not necessarily take away their right to own.
This was my time travel mission, by the way. I realized I didn't create a time paradox by this.
What's that?
I go back to Independence Hall and be like, listen, I know none of you know me. What you're about to write is critical for the next 200 plus years. You need to make sure the wording is crystal clear.
You need to become that chick that you hated at the store. Please, Mr. Jefferson,
yeah.
cross your T's and dot your I's.
Is there any other word besides bear we can use? Is bear the word right. you intend? Can we extrapolate that wording like another sentence and like this applies to personal ownership of firearms by the individual and all individuals right. of the United States of America?
I think part of the problem that they ran into is that they, or that we're running into now, is that the Constitution was written.
Are you running out of paper? I got more paper. We got more paper to write on.
No, I mean, when they wrote it, they knew exactly what they wrote. It made perfect sense to them.
That's why I always bring up the mindset of them writing this document compared to what we're arguing about. The people talk about the spirit of the Constitution or the spirit of the amendment. I'm like, frankly, we don't know it. And if you look at it logically, it was we don't want to be invaded. The same as the freedom of right. the press is we want to be able to spread information freely.
Right. The only way that you can really know what their intent was is by looking at like the notes of the people that were in on that signing. There are some guys that have written things down about what they personally thought about firearms and who should and shouldn't have them, all that kind of stuff. And you can go back and research it. I think who was the big one that they're always talking about on that, Neil? The Federalist Papers.
Madison?
Yeah. He was real big on guns.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, him and quite a few of the other founding fathers actually had quite a bit to say on it, but since it's not part of the Constitution, that doesn't matter. Guys, this is what they were thinking when they wrote the Constitution. Please take it into consideration while you're trying to figure out the intent of the Constitution. I don't know, maybe that makes too much sense. Of course, if you...
Oh, yeah.
Here's the argument. I love this argument. Somebody posted this on Facebook the other day. It was actually a pretty convincing video. They had a guy walk into a office with a musket, right? Walks in, points it at his boss, pulls the trigger, and then goes to start reloading it while everybody's running out and screaming, and the whole place clears while he's still reloading the musket. And they go, guns have changed since the Constitution was written. You know, maybe we should have... Or maybe the laws should too. And all I did was put a picture of like a Gutenberg press and said, the press has changed since the Constitution was written. I'm like,
no, the evolution of firearms has no bearing on my opinion on anything with this.
Right.
Because then the argument that Matt got on, or that friend of an acquaintance, like in that same thing, the guy that didn't realize that there was a mental health provision on firearm ownership. Another guy came and said, I can make a bomb and stuff with my bathroom and blah, 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 and that doesn't stop me from owning it. Okay, but if you buy 1,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate fertilizer, the FBI is going to be like, hey, he doesn't own a farm.
Right.
That is also really, that's a bad argument because that is actually regulated and watched for a good reason because
right.
you might be able to make a small pipe bomb with the shit you have in your kitchen.
And the Constitution does not give you an inalienable right to own explosives.
Right.
It says,
I'm sure Washington was imagining everybody with 50-pound mortars in their backyard. You know, right. Did we lose Neil?
No, he's there. I think he's just letting us talk. Yeah. We've learned over time from doing uniformed ops on Skype all the time that not more than one person can talk because if, like...
The cutoff?
Yeah. So we tend to wait a half a second to make sure that there's silence before the next person talks.
Yeah, you don't want to talk over anybody.
Right. So we spent an hour and 47 minutes on guns.
Yeah, we did. That's pretty impressive, actually.
I think it's the first time in either of our shows, Radio FUBAR or Uniformed Opinions, that we had a rational, coherent, and productive conversation.
You know what? We go back, like, yeah, probably the on and off 2 years that I've been podcasting with you and Ben and Noam, and yeah, I think I believe that. It's pretty close.
So, what else has happened in the news? Oh!
Is there more?
The England just fought their own war of independence.
Bullshit.
Oh, to leave the EU. I've had relationships that were longer than England was in the EU.
Yeah, I've got underwear older. Matter of fact, I am older than than England being in the EU.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm older than the EU.
England was admitted in 1975. I was born in 1974, so I predate England being part of the EU.
And they weren't really like set up or ratified until like 92? 92 went into action in 93.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think their first attempt was actually
75. I just had to look this up with Matt because he said 98, and I'm like, no, it was earlier than that, but it wasn't later than that, if that makes sense.
But I thought it was late 90s, but yeah, I think officially it was, I guess maybe officially it was like 92.
How old are you,
Yeah,
Neil?
No, I think they first applied in 75 is what it was, and they got turned down. Or
how old are you, Neil?
35.
30. Oh, shit. No, never mind.
Why what?
I first read about the formation and like adoption of the Eurozone and everything like that in one article in the Weekly Reader in elementary school. That's how I remember it, because I was...
Oh, wait. So I was in the Marines longer than...
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Wow.
Then the members... Well, the EU has actually doubled in size in the last 10 years. So.
Right.
Well, doubled in country total size, but...
So what do you think? Good, bad? I don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making it out to be.
Yeah, I think a lot of the doom and gloom stuff is going to go away once, you know, everything kind of rebounds. Obviously, the initial reaction, you know, the markets and people's reactions and stuff is going to be super negative. But then once that kind of bounces back, I think we're a long time away from seeing what the actual effects are. But I'm kind of all for anything that gives statism a bit of a blow. So I think this is a good thing.
Right. I mean, the biggest thing that's going to happen right away is, oh, we're going to have, instead of being able to trade with England under the provisions of the EU, we're going to have to fall back on our old pre-EU treaties with England. You know, our trade agreements and all that kind of stuff. Well, we've had them for, so, hey, all right. And the EU can no longer send refugees to the UK. That's about it. England was England had never used the euro. They were still under the British pound. So it's not going to affect them.
Yeah, it doesn't affect that. And you know, they won't, you know, British citizens won't be able to travel through Europe without using a passport.
Right.
I think that seems to be the biggest.
Well, they will once they get into the EU, because you can right now. As long as you get into an EU country, you can travel amongst them without your passport.
Oh, interesting.
It's just getting in the first place.
If France lets you in, then you can go through all the other ones.
Right, because that's what the refugees tend to do. They get in through like Greece or something like that, and then they just kind of filter to all of them.
That was a big part from the Brexiters, was they can come into a non-socialized state and then move to a socialized state, mm-hmm. and under the laws of the EU, immediately start drawing the benefits. So they could move to Spain, live there for a month, suck about $3,000 a month in benefits, or $3,000 a year in benefits. But if they somehow got across the tunnel to Britain, or got into Germany, or even Sweden, or anything like that, they could draw upwards about $15,000 a year in welfare.
Right.
And they had to get it because they were now a member of a citizen of the
right. And then on top of that, a lot of people in the UK were a little bit miffed about giving the EU.
Was so thank God it's Texas down there. Yeah. No offense.
What was it? £350 million a week?
Inflated number.
Or whatever it was.
The real math works out to like $175 million a week. And about $125 million came back a week.
All right. So they're losing $50 million or £50 million a week.
Yeah, it's not insignificant, but in terms of like state money and everything.
Right. But £50 million a week times, you know, 52, you're talking, what is that, £2.5 billion a year? For a country our size, $2.5 billion in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot of money.
There was actually a really cool post that showed the contributions to the EU, and despite being, in relative terms, one of the more recent members, Britain puts in a good 20% of the money, this roughly equal right. to Germany, and France is actually less than that with like 15-17% of the total money.
Right.
That's why everybody was threatening them not to leave and shit. And they're like, we're barely getting anything out of you. Right. No offense, other than free travel and you help support our arts with the money we give you, which we could just support the arts here with the money we're giving you. It's...
Right. Free travel and the ease of being able to trade, you know, because that was part of it, too, was, you know, free trade within the EU.
That was another thing that I read that was basically a false positive. It's not a negative. It's just a false positive because the right, UK so, had I'm to operate that, with three sets of trade rules.
Right.
One for within itself, one with the EU, and had to meet all the EU standards of manufacturing of the process of the trade goods within the EU. And then they could sell to everybody else, like the United States and Brazil and China and stuff. So them doing this actually simplifies it to two sets of rules, Britain and everybody else and the EU.
Now, really, for those that don't know much about the European Union, it's not exactly a form of government. It is. But it was more of a...
Can I help?
Yeah, go ahead.
Trade partnership.
Exactly.
It's a trade partnership that's kind of grown out of control.
Yeah. And England just finally said, we're out. Now, here's the funny thing. It was, what, 51.9, I think, was the total vote to get out?
Yeah, something like that.
But when they broke it down into, say, England versus Scotland versus Ireland.
Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland, sorry. Scotland and Northern Ireland were like, we really want to stay.
They overwhelmingly voted stay.
Right. And now they're talking again. Maybe we should get out of the UK. That talk's fired back up again. Didn't you guys just have that vote?
Well, that's actually when the UK said to Northern Ireland, Scotland, like, or to Scotland specifically, if you leave, you're technically not a member of the European Union. You'll be your own country. You'll be your own stuff, and you won't have any support or trade and all this other. You have to manage all this crazy stuff. It's better if you just stay.
They would.
And then about a year later, hey, we're leaving the European Union.
And now, right. if Scotland did leave the UK, the European Union, just to stick its thumb in the eye of England, would just be like, oh, hey, Scotland, come on back to the European Union. Well,
that's exactly what I predicted with Matt. Like, all they have to do is slip a line like, hey, if we leave the UK, will you definitely accept it? Yeah, yeah, just to piss them off.
Oh, Brussels would jump on that in a heartbeat. Like, yeah, oh, hey, fuck you, got your Scotland.
Right. The EU...
Got your nose!
The EU is really just a whole bunch of countries doing kind of what the United States and Canada does already. The United States and Canada cooperate on a lot of things where they say, you know, labor practices, manufacturing practices, trade practices, transportation between Canada and the U.S. practices, all that kind of stuff. We have agreements in place to make it easier to do and to make the regulations as similar as possible between the two countries. That's kind of what the EU is, just for a bigger group of countries.
But like Neil said, they've moved towards federalization slowly right. over the past 20 years.
Well, they've gotten to the point where the EU wants to come down and say, no, this is the way it's going to be in some of the countries.
I think that was a big factor for a lot of people in England voting to leave, is that they're, it's not so much that they mind it, the whole bigger state socialist aspect of it. It's just that they want that to be run through their parliament, not through, you know, all of these other representatives in Brussels, where, as somebody put it the other day, England finally got the concept of no taxation without representation.
Right.
Or have, if they're going to do it, at least allow it to be like representative, like the UN, so to speak. Hey, I know the UN's, but what they're saying, like even making the parliament of the EU, where it's an elected representative that goes there to represent the people of the UK, not the federal government of the UK, they're appointing him.
As opposed to Brussels just dictating what the policy is going to be.
Yeah, and basically when he gets there, he's a superdelegate. He doesn't even have to do what the UK says. Anybody in the UK, even, yeah, the Prime Minister get up the phone and say, vote this way, and he doesn't have to. He can go, ah, I'm in the EU now. They gave me champagne.
And it's real champagne, because it came from France. It came from that one specific region of
maybe
France.
Maybe England will get decent food now. Like, they'll actually have to start making some. Because that was the big thing, like, Davian was bitching that, like, you're not going to get wine and cheese and sausages and everything like that anymore. And I'm like, how about you guys just learn to make your own good food?
Hold on. What time is it in England? It's like 3 a.m. I bet he's awake.
Have you seen the
just
meme?
Before we get him on here, I want you to know he was hardcore Remain.
He's not on.
Have you seen the meme? It's a picture of, and it is, there's like French wine and Polish sausage and German beer, and off to the side at like the bottom of the table is just a can of beans
and a couple things of bacon. Yeah.
And like a little thing, and it says basically Brexit explained.
I'm like, if that's your argument for staying, that the food alone is worth the tyranny.
I mean, I love the Chinese food here, and I love New York style pizza, but there's a reason I left New Jersey for Idaho.
I heard something this morning on NPR of all places. I said, well, you know, basically they're setting a path for us, so I guess if Trump's elected, then we have a plan for Trexit. If Hillary gets elected, you know, then we can clex it. But I really hope that Bernie Sanders wins, because then we can
sex it.
I saw a couple people tweeted the same couple of jokes. One said, if Trump gets elected, I hope we see Texit happen.
Right.
And then somebody else said, well, if all this goes to shit under Hillary or Trump, I hope we end up with a Tennessee. Yeah.
Did you see the Duffel blog this morning?
No, I didn't. What did they what did they put out?
Semper fucks it. The Marine Corps votes to exit the Department of the Navy. In a move military analysts call simply stunning, the Marine Corps voted in a referendum Friday to leave the Department of the Navy, forming a separate branch tentatively named Men's Department of the Navy. Defense contractor stocks closed sharply down in the wake of the historic vote. The results were close, with 51.9% voting to leave and 48.1% voting to remain. Exit polling data showed the vote split along demographic lines, with a slight majority of officers and all Marines from Texas voting to leave. More enlisted favoring remaining, especially those with four or more dependents. The hotly contested vote over what became known as Semper Fuxit followed months of debate and campaigning from both sides. Though the issue has been debated at Naval Institute Symposia for several years, Marine Corps Commandant General Robert Neller only agreed to hold a Facebook poll on the question after being, quote, no-ballsed, end quote, in a disagreement with Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus. According to sources, the disagreement regarded funding the next amphibious assault vehicle. The Remain camp fought for the Corps to stay within the Navy, citing the service's amphibious traditions and the, quote, need for a service to call worthless, end quote, while transporting them to battle, sources in Miller's office say. However, the leave camp won out with voters choosing the side that urged the Corps to maintain his tradition to, quote, do more with less, end quote, to include no naval gunfire, transport, medical support, or aviation assets. Hours after the vote, many Marines in the barracks were Googling what to do or what do those Navy pogues even do and how much leave are we getting? The future of RIMPAC, an annual major Pacific multinational exercise set to begin next week, is now in doubt. When asked for comment, Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus said, quote, wait, that really happened? Jesus, how fucking drunk were they? End quote.
That is just fucking brilliant.
Goddamn duffel block.
Another home run. God, they're like the Sosa and Maguire of satire writing.
Without the steroids.
Exactly. I'm relatively sure they're clean.
Yeah, one they did yesterday, the B-52s back on tour and playing the classics.
For military satire, I think they win.
Jody willing to stand in for you this Father's Day.
The Onion is still so good at it, people think they're real stories.
Yeah, The Onion is absolutely amazing.
Oh, God. This headline just made me crack up. VA adds and a wake up to automated phone wait time.
Wow, you might have to explain that one. That's really funny.
There's someone to come in every once in a while and say, hey, are you still there?
No, it's something we used to say in the Marines during boot camp. We'd say, how many days you got left? Well, I got 48 days and a wake up.
The wake up, like, so the day you go home, all you have to do is wake up.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that day, so you basically say, and you go to bed that night on the 48th day, you're pretty much done.
Right. The Department of Veterans Affairs will soon replace its automated system announcing telephone wait time to address concerns about the length and accuracy of those times. Secretary Robert McDonald announced today. The revolutionary technology will automatically add the words and a wake up to the estimated time given by the former system, ensuring the needs of veterans will be met statistically faster than ever before. For instance, when the system would previously announce your expected wait time is 2 hours, it'll now tell a caller your expected wait time is 2 hours and a wake up. Or the alternative message, your call matters to us. An operator will be with you in 2 hours and a wake up.
That's really great.
Oh.
Out of the whole Brexit thing.
I figured we'd talk about Brexit more than 5 minutes.
Well, I was more going to laugh at some of the morons that don't understand it from America.
No, go ahead.
Because even Matt was like, well, we're one step closer to World War III. Are you fucking serious?
I don't understand.
Oh, you mean because the EU had the ability to launch the UK or the UK's nuclear weapons?
I was talking to him about what's going on here. Why is that World War III? He's like, well, then the UK splits up and then the economy goes. I'm like, and how does that lead to World War III? That sounds like England's economy crashing. If it happens that way, I'm like, why does that mean the rest of the world goes like the Britain's going to invade Germany to get their money back? What's going to happen in your mind?
Right. Oh, Matt said this?
Right. It's a post on Facebook. You can look at it. I'm not making it up. I've been trying to because what's now that it's over, the leave side is pretty much quiet.
Right.
The Remain side are the ones coming out with constant memes and pictures saying, you idiots, you idiots, you idiots. So there's literally only one half of the story being told right now, which is the other side's just morons.
Here's the other funny thing.
The other side that got their way, they're idiots.
Here's the other funny thing that absolutely nobody is talking about. And I researched this just to make sure. And it's a simple question on Google. Is the Brexit vote binding? Parliament. No, it is not. Parliament could theoretically say, you know what? Y'all are stupid. We're not getting out of the EU.
They could totally cool story bro them.
Right.
And just say, all right, oh, you voted to leave? Cool story, bro. We're staying. But they have said that they won't do that.
Right. I'm saying they could, and there is that possibility still there.
I also read something today that said apparently something in the law, like in the, you know, great, in the laws of the UK and Great Britain, that this could, like, it could trigger, like, I think Scotland and Northern Ireland could trigger, like, something could trigger where they would have veto power over this. And I didn't read it too in depth. Honestly, I didn't realize I was going to be talking about Brexit.
I don't think that's the case because Scotland and Northern Ireland already have their members in Parliament.
See, that's what I would think too. So I don't know how they could just veto the referendum that way by, you know, just by themselves.
Right.
Unless there's something, you know, unless there's some kind of crazy language that says, like, yeah, I don't know, you know, tea time is canceled or whatever.
Right. I'm going to be honest.
Oh, God, that whole country's going down.
Right. I'll be honest.
Then we get World War III.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what would start World War III. Yeah. We didn't get our tea today. Ah!
I told them they should go out and pour champagne into the tunnel.
All right. Scots, no more plaid imports.
They make their own.
It's all right. No more Scotch exports.
Now you actually have to eat haggis.
It's, you know, it's not bad with mustard.
I should have rephrased. Now you actually have to boil your bacon.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Ireland, no more Guinness exports.
Does that affect Northern Ireland? I think that would... Oh, well.
Isn't that Dublin?
That is Dublin, so that'd be Ireland.
That's, yeah.
Which I guess is just Ireland.
All right.
Ireland.
This lesson with our Dakotas and our Carolinas, we really should be a Northern Ireland and a Southern Ireland.
Right.
We don't have North Dakota and Dakota.
Now you're going to get car bombed just for saying that.
You're both right.
And not the fun kind with a shot in the middle.
Can we go back to guns for a second?
Take a hit, though.
I guess.
Oh, God. Hold on. Keep talking about this for a second while I pull up the story. But this...
Talking about guns, scary.
Don't fire one. You might get PTSD.
That's what I was going to... Yes.
I knew you weren't going to let that go. I'm like,
how did we not hit on that when we were talking about Orlando?
As a liberal, as a moderate liberal, this man has nothing to do with me or my views or my representation. This is...
Talk about a cowardly faggot.
I want to actually find his.
It's not as bad as the girl that claimed she got PTSD from mean tweets, but it's pretty close.
Talked about that on Uniformed Ops, and boy, that one we brought the humor with. That was an easy one to get right. Funny about.
Now this is from the New York Daily News, so all right. It felt to me this is from. Gersh.
I can't even get through the first three words of this article without laughing.
His name like, yeah, isn't his name like Gersh
Kuntzman?
Well, he's certainly living up to
his
that.
His name says it all.
What do they call him, you think? Is it Gary? Jerry? Or just, probably, hey, Gersh? Like,
I think they use probably an abbreviation of his last name.
Well, day.
It felt like a bazooka and sounded like a cannon.
Both of which I've never fired in my life.
Yeah, which he's also had zero experience with.
First of all, bazookas are pretty much recoilless.
As soon as I climbed to that F-150, I felt exactly like an M1 Abrams operator.
Right. And if you've ever heard a cannon... Anyway... One day after 49 people were killed in the Orlando shooting, and I appreciate him actually putting the right number on it, I traveled to Philadelphia to better understand the firepower of military-style weapons and hopefully explain their appeal to gun lovers. But mostly, or let's see.
Wait, he's going to explain the appeal of firearms to gun lovers?
He thought he could... Right.
So I'm going to tell you why you guys already like this stuff.
No, no.
He's going to explain why gun lovers
he's trying to explain gun lovers' appeal.
I'm just trying to highlight the fact this guy's a shitty writer, too.
But mostly, I was just terrified. Many gun shops turned down our request to fire and discuss the AR-15, a style of semi-automatic fire or rifle popular with mass killers such as the San Bernardino terrorist and in similar capabilities to the Sig Sauer MCX rifle used by Orlando terrorist Omar Dumbass. I don't like giving out the killer's names. I just
Omar Shitstain.
Right.
Can I paint the word picture for you? You and Neil are sitting behind your counter at your gun store, and in saunters this man with skinny jeans and a summer scarf and a little newsy cap and a stainless steel water bottle with some sort of Van Gogh painting inscribed upon it with laser etching, with three or four people holding notepads and microphones and cameras and recorders, and comes up and says, "So, we're interested in firing an AR-15.
Right. Now, I'm going to read you this article, and then I'm going to read my Facebook post to it. Was it on? I forget where I posted, but I'll find it. But Frank Stelmach of Double Tap Shooting Range and Gun Shop invited me, videographer Mike Sheridan, reporter Ann Shira, to come down. Stelmach is not like many gun lovers. He admires his weaponry, yes, and has difficulty explaining why law-abiding citizens need a gun that can empty a 40-round magazine in a few seconds. I'm starting a Gun Busters. That's... but he also hates the idea that bad people get a hold of a gun like this and use it to kill without difficulty. Who doesn't?
Neil.
Yeah. Sorry. My bad. I don't value human life.
We found the one.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. I'm the guy.
There should be expanded background checks. Extending into your family, friends, and associates. And there should be a mental health screening. In Europe, if you want to buy a gun, you have to see a doctor for a psychiatric examination.
Turn your head and cough?
To see if something's not right. Stelmach, who opened its gun shop 6 years... Anyway, I'm going to get down to where he...
describes his ordeal.
Actually describes his ordeal. He loves the AR-15, cops, hunters, and it's fun for people, or it's fun to shoot something like that, he said. Not in my hands. I've shot pistols before, but never anything like an AR-15. Squeeze lightly on the trigger, and the resulting explosion of firepower is humbling and deafening, even with ear protection. The one thing an AR-15 or an M16 is not, is deafening.
Even if you don't have ear protection in it.
Right. The recoil bruised my shoulder.
And no, it didn't. You're lying.
Yeah, you're just flat out lying.
No way.
Wait. Let's take consideration for his Armani jacket. He might bruise easily. If he's from New York.
Very infirm... pale skin.
The recoil bruised my shoulder, which can happen if you don't know what you're doing. The brass shell casings disoriented me as they flew past my face.
So we know he's left-handed.
He's left-handed. Yeah, that's that's the only thing you can infer from that.
I swear I saw a picture and he was holding it right-handed.
If he's holding it right-handed and the rounds are flying past his face, he's just lying.
He's lying, or he got a weapon with a serious malfunction.
No, he's lying.
Or poetic.
Yes, there's just no way that, because, you know, there's no way that the brass ejects.
Or poetic like,
across
license.
The face.
It was within a foot of my face, so it flew past it.
We're also talking about the publication that called the AR-15 Satan's gun, so... Right. Let's not exactly expect objective, fact-based reporting here.
The smell of sulfur and destruction made me sick.
You should have put on war pigs for the background of this while you read this.
Now you gave him the idea.
I can do that.
You got to get through that long intro, though, with the siren going and everything.
Play it at like 0.75 speed.
In the fields of bodies burning. Ready? As the war machine. The explosions, loud like a bomb, gave me a temporary form of PTSD. For at least an hour after firing the gun, just a few times, I was anxious and irritable.
Then I had my latte.
Right. Even in semi-automatic mode, which is the only mode that the AR-15 has, it is very simple to squeeze off 24 rounds before you even know what has happened.
I don't know about anybody else, but I've got a 30-round mag in an AR. I'm always like, this thing's not done yet?
Yeah, I'm confused. Through the explosions and the flashes, how is he able to know he fired 24 rounds?
Yeah, if it was that disorienting and horrifying, there's no way he knew how many rounds he had fired.
If illegally modified to allow fully automatic mode... which is not as easy as you would think.
Oh, you just got to grind down that one part.
Yeah, but that Michael Moore said on Twitter that all you have to do is have like a, you know, generic high school shop class and you could do that. And he seems like he's pretty on the ball about these things.
He's up front. We know that.
It doesn't take any imagination to see dozens of bodies falling in front of your barrel.
Whoa!
See, you're the kind of person that we don't want having a firearm.
Hirsch, you just put yourself on a no-buy list.
I trained to kill people, and I never thought of that.
You shot at targets with outlines with the shape of a human body.
Yeah, and I never thought, oh man, I can't wait till that's a real person in front of there.
All it takes is the will to do it. 49 people can be gone in 60 seconds.
That's a great movie, too.
Update.
Now you got to play Lowrider.
Or something by the Cars.
Many people have objected to my use of the term PTSD in the above story. The use of this term was in no way meant to conflate my very temporary anxiety with the very real condition experienced by many of our brave men and women in uniform. And rape victims and car accident victims and attempted murder victims and
victims of domestic abuse.
Right. Asshole. I regret the inarticulate use of the term to describe my in-the-moment impression of the gun's firepower and apologize for it. I have also posted a follow-up piece here. Shall we?
When did you write this article, you disingenuous butthole? Well, did you write it right then? Like, did you fire the gun so that was go, PTSD?
Right.
Like...
Crap, I better explain what I meant when I...
I was literally typing on my computer while firing the gun. It was heat of the moment.
Here's his update. To gun lovers, I haven't read this. You can't even have an opinion on assault rifles unless it's theirs. Here's the proof. The gun debate is also a gender war. In all of my years in journalism, coming up on 30... I have never received so much angry mail as I did after yesterday's story, what it's like to fire an AR-15. I don't mind spirited debate, but many correspondents told me that even expressing an opinion about today's high-powered... The AR-15 is not high-powered. Anyway, high-powered...
It is compared to literally anything else this guy has ever touched in his life.
Right. It's high-powered to a... 22. It's a high-powered 22 is what
it is. He probably drives a Prius, so it's probably more high-powered than his engine.
is off limits.
That round is definitely going faster than a Prius.
Is off limits to those of us who don't own guns. To reiterate, the goal of the story was simply to share my readers my experience in firing an AR. Have you ever fired an AR-15, Pete?
Yes.
Did you cringe in?
Was your experience anything like this douche nozzle?
No, it was actually really fun to shoot.
Right.
Because before that, I had got to fire the SKS, which was hell on the ears because we didn't bring ear protection.
Right.
Ooh.
And that's the one where I'm going to like, no, well, that gave me some ringing in the ears. I stepped away from it. And I'm like, holy shit.
Well, the SKS is a 308.
Yeah. Then I shot my buddy's. He had the Smith & Wesson.
Right.
And I was like, holy shit, this is a dream.
Right.
I could do this for hours. And then I started imagining the bodies falling in front of me.
All right. To reiterate, the goal of my story was simply to share with readers my experience of firing an AR-15, which very few of them have done. No. The goal of your story was to scare the living piss out of uninformed people just as uninformed as you. Sorry. I editorialized there for a minute. I found...
Oh, rightfully so, because that line is bullshit. Like, that's... He totally thought he was just going to write something that was going to keep the opinion of the average daily news reader.
Right.
Just more frothing to that side about how this inanimate object is completely evil. And then he got called out on his bullshit.
I found the sheer power of the weapon terrifying, or horrifying, sorry.
My God.
I found the noise deafening and anxiety provoking. I was frightened by its potential for rapid, catastrophic, Orlando-like carnage with similar weaponry.
Whoa. Team America, it's going to be 9/11 times 1,000. It's going to be Orlando.
911,000.
It's going to be Orlando times 50.
Using an AR-15 made me irritable and jittery for hours afterward. To me, it felt like a bazooka. Now...
Oh my God.
The very first.
This motherfucker cries during sex.
The very.
That's it.
That's the show. That's the show. That's it. That's go to Twitter. Tell that to this guy. Do you cry during sex when your wife moans? Is it like the wail of 1,000 dying orphans?
I think that's going to be the name of the show. Actually, episode 109. This
Gersh cries during sex.
This cunt cries during sex.
This cunt cries during sex.
Gersh cunt dies.
This cunt. He's doing sex.
What does this guy do when he hears a car backfire?
No kidding.
Does he flee to the nearest air raid shelter? Like, what's...
I shot a shotgun once when I was little. Other than that, the very first time I fired a weapon at all was an M16 in boot camp.
I got a bruised shoulder from one firearm, which was a break action 10 gauge.
Yeah. And if you're not holding it right, yes, that will damage the shit.
And I was not holding it right.
Single shot break action 12 gauge before my first turkey hunting season with my uncle. I was maybe 10 years old.
Right.
And I'd only fired a 22 rimfire before that. So I wasn't super tucked in or anything. And that thing gave me a hell of a wail on the shoulder. Right. I went... Well, I won't do that again.
Well,
and then I went, okay, so tomorrow morning we're going hunting?
Right. I was about 5 years old, and I was down at my grandma and grandpa's, and my uncle was teaching me how to shoot a 20 gauge. You know, a little pew, 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 you know.
20's not anything too terrible.
No, it's not. Now, my grandfather comes out and hands me a break action shotgun, says, here, try this. He drops a couple rounds and it hands it to me. I look at it and I'm like, 5 years old and this is my first day ever shooting guns. Two triggers. I guess I need to pull both of them. Boom! It was a double-barreled 8-gauge. And I let off both barrels simultaneously.
What? I don't even... What does an 8-gauge shell even Elephants. Look like?
It's an elephant gun. Elephant gun.
It had to be, right?
Huh?
It had to be, right?
It is.
It is an elephant gun.
That is the gauge of the elephant gun.
Whatever. Did you fool, McBragg. I took out my elephant gun and I shot him. Like, that's that gun.
That's the gun you kill Tremors with.
Right.
Yeah.
Now.
Fish through schools.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, I think Frank killed a barn that day.
This is a 357 Magnum. It'll crack the engine block of a car. Well, this is a double-barreled 8-gauge.
Kills elephants.
They can hear me in tanks shooting right. This.
Yeah. Now, I was 5 years old, and that thing bruised the shit out of my shoulder.
I would hope so. You're
I didn't
lucky
have,
you didn't get dislocated and shit, Frank.
I didn't have PTSD.
You're,
all right.
You're lucky you didn't, like, comically, like, get thrown backwards, like, 30 feet, like,
I did. No, I got thrown back on my butt. But, I just got knocked over. You know, I didn't get thrown with the air.
That is like
somebody yanked forward.
That's about, like, 6 ounces of smokeless powder, isn't it?
I have no idea.
I don't even know what goes into that kind.
Because those shells, were they slugs or?
Yeah, they're slugs.
That's like 6 ounces of gunpowder. That's not insignificant amount of explosives.
No, it's not. No. Now it's just my grandpa being a dick, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, you're going to grow up today.
Right. Kuntzman is an outright liar, wrote one emailer. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lying Kuntzman.
Yeah. Nice try with an extremely stupid article which only appealed to girly boys and women of NYC, and like the sheeple, they are probably believed the lies. Otherwise, inform me that the lies that guns are bad. For the record, I never said they were. Okay. I certainly received many, many emails from gun owners who legitimately quibbled with some of my conclusions. But the majority of email senders, he's saying this without proof, by the way, trained their laser sights on my masculinity. Like we've been doing.
Please tell me. I really haven't been going after his manly manless. I mean, he could wrestle bears after that for all I give a damn. You still claim to get PTSD from a...
often in graphic terms that would sound more appropriate in a magazine about erectile dysfunction or an ad for Depends.
Hey, I said he cries during sex, and yeah. I stand by that claim.
Hey there, cupcake, wrote Gary Hanney. I have never subscribed to the idea of gender confusion, but after reading your article on AR-15, I am a believer because there is no way you and I are the same gender. You should surrender your testicles to the Department of Girly Men. I'm not sure where it's located, but your girlfriend Barack does.
Oh. See, somebody's always got to make it about Obama when it doesn't need to be about Obama.
That was Eugene from Arizona, everybody.
Others sent me videos of 7, 10, and 12-year-old girls firing the same weapon I fired. Except these kids were smiling, and I wear it as a point of personal pride that conservative darling Eric Hansen posted a story on the resurgent, or Eric Erickson, I'm sorry, on the resurgent with the headline, My 10-year-old daughter is tougher than Gersh Kuntzman, author of The Stupidest Thing on the Internet Today.
You know what? I'm not a big Eric Erickson fan, but that's pretty funny. Author of The Stupidest Thing on the Internet Today.
You fucking pussy, wrote Sam Marcota. If you have a man card, turn it in immediately. You might be better served writing about feminine hygiene products.
The only reason I'm not going after that so easily is because it implies that any woman that fires this also has a man card.
Right.
Let's not make it that way. Let's make it, you're just a priss.
Right. Your father must have left you to be raised by your mother, or he was a sissy like you, added Sergeant Mike 77. And one of my favorites, thanks to its pithy manner of linking my affliction to another right-wing obsession. Maybe you can get some balls through Obamacare.
Gersh Kuntzman was
like,
in his.
I like that one.
Was in his elementary school's Christmas pageant. He played Prancer.
You sure he didn't play Mary?
sure you sure he didn't play Vixen?
What's that?
Or Cupid? And that's just the printable stuff. To summarize, this line of argument suggests that I'm not a real man because I'm frightened by the awesome power of an AR-15. Which, despite however you willfully misread my story, can discharge dozens of rounds in mere seconds. Yes, this weapon scared the crap out of me. It should scare the crap out of you, too. This isn't journalism.
This musket can discharge rounds, dozens of rounds in a matter of minutes.
You know, if the super awesome godlike powers of the AR-15 shook this guy up so bad, what do you think he would do with a 75 caliber flintlock musket? Yeah.
An AR-15 is a weapon of mass destruction, a tool that should only be in the hands of our soldiers and cops, as Representative Seth Moulton wrote in the Daily News on Tuesday. Well, Representative Seth Moulton needs to be voted the fuck out of office. Sorry.
Well, you can't say that. Representative Seth Moulton was a Marine, so his opinion is obviously better than anyone else's.
Well, if he was a Marine, then he's a dumbass Marine.
Yeah, exactly.
I had this.
Like, you know, the Marine Corps doesn't exactly have the reputation of being the smartest.
He was officer, probably so. A pogue.
Civilian.
A person other than grunt.
Yeah.
He was an admin weenie, probably.
What we used to call, what used to be called a remf.
Rear echelon motherfucker.
Oh.
I've never seen combat, although it's hard to tell from the picture right. that the Daily News used.
But. I don't think there's anything unmanly about pointing out this fact. Besides, if masculinity is defined by the power to commit violence on a wide scale, I proudly choose femininity. At one time, being a man meant standing up for what you believed in.
Well then, sir. Reread those tweets and emails.
And again, injustice. By that definition, we need more real men in power taking on bullies like the NRA, which seem to bolster the Second Amendment by shutting down opponents right to the first.
Say what?
When has the NRA ever said?
I'm going to cut you off right there and answer this by saying never.
And when did any of these men say he didn't have a right to express his opinion?
Right.
They were just expressing theirs back.
Right.
We just
never has the NRA said
stupid.
You can't talk about that. The NRA says, you have your opinion, here's ours.
This disingenuous ball gargler is pissing me off.
Yeah. Which seeks to bolster the Second Amendment. We can't even debate guns in this country thanks to the gun lobby.
What are you doing right now, you son of a bitch?
Oh no shit. No, you think because they don't agree with you that they can't have their voice.
It's not a debate unless you win it, Frank.
Right. My email and internet trolls won't believe me, but I support the Second Amendment. I sincerely do believe that the Bill of Rights protects Americans' right to bear arms, albeit under very strict restrictions, the well-regulated militia part of the sacred text. And I even agree with one letter writer who pointed out that hammers can kill people too, but we don't ban them. But what if a weapons manufacturer could fashion a handgun that would fire a nuclear blast? And it... Wow, this guy's gone off the deep end.
A banuka, if you will.
Right. An atomic version of the AR-15, like, if you will.
Nuka. You know what? If it's banana shaped, I'm still not going to be against it. We'll call it the Donkey Kong.
It would look like a gun, but it could kill thousands instead of dozens. Like a rifle, it's one of the many arms that we are allowed to keep and bear, except for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which doesn't let... Anyway.
I want to bite this guy on the face.
But would we really stand idly by as people buy a nuclear gun in the name of the Second Amendment?
Neil's going Tyson.
It's
on his
just
ass.
A gun, they might say. It's right. It's my right. Trade in your man card, you wimp. Yeah, I'm a wimp. I simpered because my experience with the AR-15 bruised me, body and spirit. But there's nothing unmanly about reminding my readers that mass murder is much easier to commit with a semi-automatic killing machine than it is with a hammer.
So one amendment. Neil, if he didn't cry it during sex before.
I've said it before and I've said it again. I have no problem if you want to try to amend the Constitution to get rid of the Second Amendment. I'll fight you on it. But if you happen to win and you can amend the Constitution to get rid of the Second Amendment, one of two things has happened. Either they'll do like I do, and I'll say, okay, you did it the right way. You got rid of the guns. Here's my gun. And then you'll have some people that'll say, fuck you, it's World War III. Or Civil War 2.0.
Yeah. I think it's more because, you know, how do you, because that's, you know, that's the other thing. Okay, you pass that. You go ahead. I'm not even going to fight it. I'm going to let you pass this thing that repeals the Second Amendment. Then I'm going to put my popcorn in the microwave, and I'm going to grab a beer, and I'm going to watch you enforce confiscation.
Right. But at least then, I mean, if they pass a law negating the Second Amendment, say it's gone. You know, what are we at now, 29? I don't know. The Second Amendment is hereby repealed. They can do it. They did it with Prohibition. That's all the one repealing Prohibition says is, hey, that amendment, we goofed. It's gone. Sorry. It could be done. There is a process in place in the Constitution to amend the Constitution for the changing times the Founding Fathers foresaw. If you believe that adamantly, use it. Change the Constitution. Then you're at least following the goddamn Constitution. Thank you. If you change the Constitution...
Would either of you guys give up your guns?
Yeah.
I'm like three beers into tonight.
They went through the democratic process of the United States of America. An amendment came out that says you no longer have the right to own guns as a private citizen.
I feel like the constitutionalist in me, as long as it was done that way, would say that is the will of the people, so yeah. Okay.
You did it the proper way. You constitutionally took away my right to bear arms.
But I think a large part of me, depending on what happened, might be pretty... Vive la resistance.
I'm not saying I wouldn't like it, but yes, I would. I'm pretty sure there would be a rather sizable minority of gun owners who wouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
But I think the majority of them said, all right, you win.
Because, you know, because that's the problem with confiscation or anything like that, is that who's gonna turn them in? People that believe in the law.
Right.
And then, so who are you disarming? People that believe in the law, the people that are least likely to be a problem to begin with.
Right.
Now, you go ahead and you do that. Who's going into Chicago and making sure all those guns get turned in? Who's going into Detroit and making sure all those guns get turned in? Or South Central Los Angeles?
We'll offer them books. Like they do in Los Angeles.
Programs.
$200 Walmart cards.
Guys, come on. Midnight basketball. You don't need guns for that. Let's go. So I think that's, you know, that's obviously the biggest problem. Even if you were to repeal the Second Amendment, is then what?
I got to admit, those LA cops doing that shit, that's got to be fucked up a little bit. Like, if you know, like, one of the guys was a suspect in a murder or something a year or two ago, where, you know, it was a drive-by and a kid got shot or something, you went after him and nothing stuck. And then he shows up to one of the gun drop-offs and it's the right caliber and firearm describe and everything, and you got to give the guy $200 to get that gun.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
The safe firearm exchanges.
Okay.
It wouldn't be my job.
You were not listening that much?
Yeah, I'm...
Like, you're a cop in L.A.
Right.
There's a drive-by. You get a suspect. You investigate. Nothing sticks. Nothing pinned. And then a year or two later, during those one of those amnesty gun exchanges, the guy comes up and puts the gun in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to give him $100 for it or something. Like, oh, fuck you three times over, you son of a bitch.
You're like, oh, how long have you had that?
Your Honor, my taser just went off.
Did you have that about 6 months ago when I pulled you over?
They actually can't, they can't even ask that.
No, you can't. That would totally be illegal.
It defeats the entire, so they just have to take it and smile, pretty much.
Basically.
And then what are you going to do? Because technically it's one less gun off the street and shit.
Yeah.
I don't know how to search for a post or a comment within a post. Because I don't remember whose post it was that I went off on.
Oh, that's not good.
Anyway.
Oh, fuck that, though.
I basically said everything I just said here. You know, like, I think it was really the AR-15 bruised your shoulder. Try shoulder firing an M60. Or here, shoot one round of my out of my M82.
Oh, yeah.
One round. You want to talk about a bruised shoulder? Wow. And you want to talk about deafening? Shoulder fire an M60. That'll deafen you up real quick. You ever shoulder fired an M60, Neil?
Fuck no.
Oh, that's right. You weren't lifting back then, were you?
No, I was. I shoulder fired an M249, but that's just a 5.56 round anyway. Right. You know, it's the same round as the M16, the AR-15. So that was not much of anything.
Right.
Yeah, I got lucky. I was not give the smallest guy in the squad the hog type of guy.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why my dog's going nuts, but he is.
He's a dog, and they do that.
Yeah, and I see a strange car outside in the house next door. All right. Anyway,
PTSD.
Squirrel.
Honestly, I think he might have fired an AR-15 when I didn't know about it, and he's got some PTSD from it, so.
Like, sorry, because I didn't get to say it just when you were starting, because he's apparently was targeting that article towards his readers that are gun lovers. And I kind of want to just demand some journalistic integrity from him and be like, sir, honestly, how many of your frequent readers are gun lovers?
Well, he did say that at one point, that not a lot of his, or not a whole lot of his readers knew anything about.
But the first part of the article said he was addressing it to the readers that do love guns. And his perception is someone that had never fired it before. It's like, but so you targeted an article towards 30 readers, 40. How many of your frequent readers?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when the Sandy Hook, because this is the area, I lived in the area that is, the biggest circulation for the Daily News. When Sandy Hook happened, they went on it. I think that's when they really started going on a crusade against the AR-15. And I can't imagine that too many people whose politics line up with being enough of a gun fan to disagree with that were still dedicated Daily News readers. So I don't know what kind of, the audience that he was reaching with that was probably very much in line with his views that guns are loud and scary and nobody should have them.
Yeah.
And that he was not trying to reach, gun people and try to figure out, like, hey, why do you guys like this so much? You shouldn't like it like you do.
Because nobody's ever shot that gun.
He's claiming to be a journalist, demand some integrity from him. Like, no, you change that part of the article. You say, I lied about this. Like,
I drive an 80,000-pound vehicle every damn day of the week. Yesterday, or last night, I had to drive into this little podunk town in Iowa to pick up a load of air filters, right? Right next to the business where I was doing it, they had their county fair going on. They were packed in there like sardines getting ready for the concert. You don't think it would have been very easy for me to drive my truck straight through the middle of that county fair and wipe out more than 50 people? You don't need a gun to kill 50 people. If you want to kill 50 people, you will find a way to kill 50 people.
You could, you know, I mean, we've seen it. You could kill a lot more than 50 people with a van full of fertilizer.
Yes. Fertilizer and diesel fuel.
Yep.
What's stopping somebody from crash landing a fucking Cessna in the middle of a elementary school playground?
Affording a Cessna.
You can steal one if you really wanted to steal one.
Getting it in the air.
Flying lessons.
Right. You don't need flying lessons to crash a plane. We learned
tell that to I know at least six guys will disagree with you.
You don't need flying lessons, you just don't need landing lessons.
Right.
So you probably got a pretty good deal that way.
All right. Trigger the FBI.
Right.
You go into a flight school. What's it's $600 for 8 weeks. I'll give you $300 for four.
Right. Oh, we had that.
How's that broken down?
Yeah. We actually had that happen a few weeks ago at work, and one of the other trainers got a brand new student, and the student looked at him and says, look, I'll give you $200 if you'll kind of speed up the process a little bit so I can get to going. I'm like, nope.
Like, yeah, how about that thing where I could get into a lot of trouble doesn't happen?
Right. Oh, this actually ended up being a pretty good show. I'm surprised.
We picked up in the second half there. I kept drinking.
Well, usually I'm the one getting drunk.
I like this whole Saturday night thing. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, well, like I said, I figured with Noam and Ben being out for the next couple of weeks and Matt not showing up today, I said, screw it, let's call Ben. Call Neil. He's never doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I have so little of a social life, so.
Well, we've talked about that before. There's no such thing as a social life in Idaho unless you shoot things.
Stop that.
Or drink things.
Well, okay, that's very true.
Or lift really heavy things.
Every once in a while, you have to take that cart of potatoes into town, Frank. There's some social aspects to Idaho.
Could be gone possibly a fortnight. Those cows don't drive themselves down to Colorado. It's all very true. If you don't drink, you know, there's really not a lot to do.
Is there... Other than Boise, is there even a decent-sized city in Idaho?
So I'm trying to think.
How many Walmarts in the state of Idaho?
Oh, there's like four in Boise alone.
I know. Okay, leaving out Boise, yeah, how many Walmarts?
So that puts eight in the rest of the state.
That means Boise.
Yeah, because if you know, like, if you're not, and especially if you're not in Boise, like nobody really goes like Nampa and Caldwell.
We've got three.
We got there's four.
Boise also has Meridian.
Have four.
That's Meridian, what I'm saying. That puts it about the same size as the Quad Cities.
It's not very big at all. Like and Meridian is right next to Boise, so they've got a nice little downtown also with plenty of stuff to go do. But for the most part, like maybe Twin Falls, and maybe like and then like way up north, there's a little bit more. That's but then Canada. Other than that, the next but it pretty much is. It's like, and if you do go up north, you're still probably not going to be in Idaho because there's Moscow, but that's a little small. But it's right next to Spokane, which is just over the border. And then, is like Salt Lake. It is like the next big city in the area.
So, in other words, you know, we got the corn song here for Iowa. You've got the potato song there. You're just driving through the potato.
It's dirt. You don't get to see him. It's just dirt.
Dirt. Boise, dirt.
Unless you can dispel the rumor now, as I understood it, on one side you had mountains and on the other side you had dirt. And then you got green in Montana.
Yeah, that is mostly true. Except the thing is, the area around Boise is very green. We don't, the Boise area is not the potato area. That's actually more like eastern Idaho and a little bit north of that. Boise is actually a lot of, and the surrounding areas are a lot of like alfalfa farms. And then we do a lot of alcohol there, which is again, if you don't want to go out drinking all night, it's tough sometimes to find things to do.
I picture Idaho being like the Kentucky of the West.
You know what? That's kind of true. And instead of bourbon, I think our things are like beer and huckleberry vodka.
I was going to say, it's got to be vodka with all the potatoes you guys got.
Of course it has to be vodka because potatoes. You can't make vodka out of alfalfa. So yeah, it's huckleberry vodka is like a huge thing in Idaho. Although Boise does have an excellent whiskey and bourbon distillery in it.
Never had a huckleberry.
Oh, delicious. You'd love it.
What the hell is a huckleberry?
Well, it's berry.
All I know is that it's all I know is that it's a blue dog. That's the only huckleberry I've
Huckleberry hound. <Yeah. laughs> What they do is they take the huckleberry hounds up into the woods and the hounds pick the huckleberries.
Bring them back in a basket. You don't just squeeze the dogs.
Oh, so that's what what huckleberry hound was. He was a huckleberry herder. It's funny.
Yeah, so much like sheepdogs are sent out to keep the herds in line, huckleberry hounds go and guard the huckleberries from the bears up in the mountains. I'm lying. I don't. It's 2 years and I don't know shit about it.
Like, what's the design? What's the? I guess I could look it up, but is a huckleberry like? Does it look or taste like a raspberry or a blueberry? Is it sour, sweet, or
sweet?
Okay.
I mean, I've had it. I haven't had huckleberry vodka, which I'm sure is delicious. But there's a restaurant.
Vodka
local
is
restaurant
not meant to be flavored, so that's just wrong.
Vodka is not meant to be cherry flavored.
Okay.
No, it's a berry though. Not cherry. It's a berry.
No, I've tried a few. I've tried the flavored vodkas. They can mix well. The one that just always tastes like cough syrup, no matter what you're putting it in, is cherry vodka.
Oh, fuck that. I've had it in a. I've had a huckleberry vinaigrette salad dressing, which I know sounds super fancy and whatever, but it ends up being really good when it's used in things like that. And then
it's nothing weirder than they do in Wisconsin with cranberries.
Exactly. Yeah. Like a lot of gin stuff too, I guess, because I guess juniper berries are big out there too. So we do a lot with gin as well, which is, I mean, I'm fine with that. Gin's delicious.
You got an agreement for me. Frank doesn't do hard alcohol. No matter what he says, he doesn't.
I don't. We've tried it a few times down here, and I do not like hard liquor.
I'm kind of this. I generally, you know, I'm like 80% beer. I like good, like Irish whiskeys. You know, I like Jameson. I like Tullamore Dew. But other than that,
I don't like the burn.
I deviate very much. Yeah, and that's just it. I like Jameson because it's smooth.
Yeah. And no, but I mean, even then, I just don't like the alcohol burn of hard liquor.
Which is surprising. You still feel it because you usually take it with ice.
Yeah, but even then, I don't like it.
Mm.
But. You know, to each their own. Yeah. About the only time I can handle hard liquor is I have had the occasional rum and coke, but they're pretty more on the coke side than the rum side.
Because if I drink beer like you or any like some of our friends do, it's not even an hour or two. I get a fucking screaming migraine. It dehydrates the shit out of me so goddamn quick. I like beer. I drink it. If I drink it straight, just beer for 2 hours, bong.
Yeah, I've seen the look on Pete's face when I sat here and drank an 18-pack in a three-hour show. And he's like, how are you still functioning?
Well, more like, how are you still awake? Say, functioning is a debatable term, but...
If it's the right type of beer, I can go pretty much all night with it and not have a problem.
Right.
But I don't run into microbrews around here, right. Or like the thicker, high-quality beers, but the Coors Light, Miller Light and shit, if I drink five or six of those in a row, I probably got a fucking headache.
Right. And see, I'm so used to drinking the nasty-ass beer that, you know, I get drunk quicker on the microbrews.
Oh, yeah.
But we also don't drink them as fast, so it kind of balances out.
Yeah, if you're used to drinking, you know, Bud Light, Coors Light, whatever... Especially in the summertime, I'll drink PBR and drink that all night. And then you go to something that's like 8-9%.
Right.
Like some of those microbrews. You'll drink one or two and go, I'm feeling this.
But then we had the show last week where I hadn't really eaten all day. And then on top of that, I spent 8 hours out in 90-degree weather in a spotter truck, you know, with no air conditioning. And basically like a... sitting around all day in an unair-conditioned Humvee in the middle of the desert. That's basically what I did for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And then drank a 12-pack of beer. And it hit me real quick because I didn't drink any water, and it's just, so I was still dehydrated and on an empty stomach. So that you know, just the little bit that I drank when we got done with the show on upstairs, I put the trash can right next to the couch, and I'm like, just in case. So, all right, everybody. Thanks for listening to this special blended episode of
the Mr. Uniform Ops.
The FUBAR Ops, I guess we'll call it.
The FUBARniformed Ops.
This is actually a relatively serious show because we didn't have Matt here crack jokes.
Or us to make fun of Matt.
Or us to make fun of Matt, yeah. But
yeah, that first half was very...
It's rare.
The first half was very... It was like this show was like a mullet. It was like the first part was all business and then the second part was all party.
Much like Frank, this show was sober.
Yeah. That's probably part of it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you maybe next week. I'll have to see what Matt's doing for the 4th. Maybe we'll do this again, Neil, if you're not doing anything on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'll have to see what I'm up to. I think I fly back to Idaho on Saturday, but I should be in like plenty of time to come back on.
All right. We'll see. Thanks everybody for listening. We're out. Bye.